Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting for June 16, 2015. The time right now is 7 p.m. And Ms. Smoot, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a call. Hanford, Cutback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, and Durin.
Thank you. And we did receive word yesterday, I believe, or earlier today, that Councilmember Gamble would not be here. So unless there's opposition to it, we'll consider him excused. Okay. Councilmember Durin, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is for me to read a proclamation. This proclamation is for Speed Week. Whereas since 1954, the Evergreen Speedway at the Evergreen State Fairgrounds in Monroe has been woven into the fabric of our community, providing a venue for drivers and enthusiasts to experience motorsport events and auto racing. And whereas the Evergreen Speedway includes grandstands, paved 5/8, 3/8, and 1/5 mile ovals, figure eight track, motocross, road courses, karting, and 1/8 mile drag strip. And whereas the Evergreen Speedway is Washington's only NASCAR home track, is known as the Super Speedway of the West, and has been named one of the top 10 NASCAR home tracks in the United States. And whereas in 2015, the Evergreen Speedway celebrates Speed Week from June 22nd to June 28th, which features a number of racing and race-related events, including the Summer Showdown that was named a top five bucket list race in America by Speedway Illustrated. And whereas Speed Week draws drivers and spectators from over 20 states, Canada, and Mexico, and whereas events at the Evergreen Speedway's Speed Week will include Thursday, June 25th practice, Friday, June 26th Les Schwab Tires Summer Showdown qualifying in Budweiser Heat Races, and Summer Showdown 200 Last Chance Qualifier and the Pro 4 Alliance on June 27th. And whereas the City of Monroe values the Evergreen Speedway, a unique motorsport and racing venue for people of all ages, and providing opportunities in lodging, tourism, recreation, and automotive industries in Monroe. Now therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, proclaim the week of June 22nd as Speed Week and encourage Monroe's residents and businesses to celebrate Monroe's racing history by attending the exciting events being held at the Evergreen Speedway. And Ms. Hobbs, will you come forward to see the director? Thank you. Thank you and the county for everything that you do for this week.
Thank you.
And here's your proclamation.
Okay.
Okay, the next item that we have on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comments are limited to 5 minutes per speaker, and we have a sign-up list of folks. The first person that we have on the list is Dwight Nelson. Mr. Nelson, will you please come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
My name is Dwight Nelson, 18124 Tromley Road, Snohomish, Washington, 98290. Now I'm here tonight to, it's my understanding tonight that you guys are going to be discussing the H3O contract, and I'm hoping that you guys will not renew their contract. They have not lived up to the contract they've already previously agreed to. I understand they've been in default several times. I don't know if they're in default right now. From what I read, In the monitor, I believe they want to change the rules in regard, or change some of the conditions in regards to not doing the improvements they previously agreed to, but regarding the new building, sidewalks, improvements to the parking. They're trying to bypass all that. They have not, in my opinion, they have not been good business partners with the City of Monroe so far. They have just speak against renewing any contract because they have not shown to be, I don't want to say not trustworthy, but they haven't been able to live up to their commitment. Maybe somewhere down the road, once they get financing put into place and everything like that, then they can come back and approach. But I see, I would speak against renewing a contract with them for an extended period of time at this current moment. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, the next person that we have on the list to speak is Rosie Tattle. Ms. Tattle? Tattle.
Hi, Rosie Tattle, 14969 174th Avenue, Monroe. I live in the Pinelands area. A few days ago, I saw the mayor while he was doing something in town, and I told him I'd give him some contact information I had about DOT. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about it. My concern is Highway 2. 522, the original ring. I talked to someone at DOT and she said I'm going parallel to highway in this part of the country. They changed it for a few seconds delay, so pedestrians, it didn't work because cars are going right on red and they're looking for the cars going over the mountains. When they stop turning, the cars will turn. And then I asked her, so they're turning on red. So I asked her, what about the idea of a blinking crosswalk? She won't go for that. Let's see. And then just in speaking, I said, there's so many cars, you could give cars a lot of tickets. She goes, well, Monroe could put cops. I go, you guys designed this wrong. It's your job to fix it, not theirs. I said, when they lengthened that approach, they did it. And when I can't go on the new flyover side, they did two things that I can't use. And then I was talking to my husband. We were trying to figure out, when they widened 522 from Main Street to the flyover, did they change the speed limit? Because he said at Main Street it's 35 when you're going towards Everett. Then it goes up to 45 just before North Kelsey. And I'm wondering if that's part of the trouble. Besides the length of that and then not stopping, we were trying to figure that out. Then at the end of the DOT call, she said, well, we're looking at some other ideas. And one was to move the crosswalk going over Highway 2 to the Starbucks side. And I went over there. No way will that work because in crossing Highway 2, then I would have to put up with the way cars turning on right on the ramp. And I'd be stuck on Highway 2 right in the traffic instead of on the ramp. And I sent her a note with that. And then she said, oh, get back to me in about a month. In other words, it's low on her radar. And I'm wondering, the only time it gets on her radar is going to be when someone gets injured or worse. And I don't want that to happen. I welcome anyone's idea to give them a push before someone does. If you have to say, look, you guys are liable because you did two things in the design. And I don't want to be like my first husband on a bicycle. And before that, he was hurt in a different thing. The county was liable, not so much for design, just for a police officer leaving a post when a light wasn't working. The DOT will be liable when this does. They don't realize how much this design did. Another time when the flyover first opened, I asked them, they go, oh, there's been no change. And I have that in writing for the DOT. So any ideas you guys can have to push, I'd appreciate. If it takes, I am willing to pay for a police officer for a day or two during peak time to go to the DOT. Look, she spent for this. This is what we can show. There's a problem here. Because in their eyes, I don't think they grasp it if they gave that as an alternative. And I'm going to leave these two letters with the mayor, with them. And it has the DOT. I'd appreciate it if you get in contact with them. Thank you.
Rosie, I will be following up with staff and following up with the state on it again.
Because I want it before someone gets, not after. And I do have that letter from the DOT if you needed to scare them, but I didn't think to bring it. That it says no changes because of the flyover.
Okay.
Thank you.
The next person that we have signed up to speak this evening is Heidi Webster. Ms. Webster, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record, please? Thank you.
Heidi Webster, 13015 Ingram Road. My husband and I moved here 16 years ago to get away from Kirkland, Seattle. We wanted peace and quiet. 16 years later, we don't feel happy and safe shopping or moving around Monroe because of loiterers and panhandlers. I want to read a comment from the Facebook post from a person named Heather Jackson. This has not happened to me, but it did happen to her. 9:30 p.m. one night, someone approached my car in a scary manner, tapped on my window. When I told him I did not carry cash, he didn't seem to believe me and did not step away from my car until I told him I was going to call the police. He called me a name reserved for females and stepped back 2 feet. We should not have to be scared to go to the store to spend our hard-earned money. I witnessed these people at Bank of America last week when I was making a deposit. One of the men was abusing his dog. He was hitting him and jerking him around. And I had to turn away because I'm an animal lover. And I asked the people at Bank of America, what's being done about this? They said, you need to call the police. So I called the police. I made a report. Then the policeman said, you need to go to the city council meeting. Next thing I know, I go to Bank of America and there's lawyering, no lawyering signs up, which is awesome. Then I heard that there's signs going up at the park, which is great. So what I'd like to see happen is if we could all just feel safe and eliminate loitering and panhandling in the city, and people are talking about constitutional rights, and I don't know how that relates to panhandling and loitering. So I would just like to be able to go shopping and feel safe and not having people approach me for money or whatever. And I just would like to see something more being done. I think it's great, the signs, I'm sure everybody. Were you guys responsible for getting those signs up at the bank?
Yeah, no. It would have been, probably not at the bank. We would have, am I saying yes, we did? Yes, we did.
Okay, so I was at 7-Eleven the other day and they were over there. Did I want to go into 7-Eleven? No, because they were there. So 7-Eleven is a public place. Is it not illegal for them to be there asking for money, or is that legal?
I would defer to our police chief. Right now is a time for public comment. I think I'll have our police chief take notes, and we'll probably respond a little bit later in the meeting.
Okay. I just want to feel safe. I want to feel good about living here. You know, we're trying to attract businesses, and if citizens are afraid to be shopping and moving around the town, what is that going to say to the businesses that are trying to move in here? You know? Anyway, thank you.
The next person that we have signed up to speak is Julie Martinoli. Ms. Martinoli, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Julie Martinoli, and my address is 12530 227 Avenue Southeast, Memo. So I'm here also to speak about the to encourage a no panhandling, no loitering ordinance. First of all, I want to thank the City Council and the police and everybody who was involved in doing the park cleanup. I really appreciate the fact that you have all of these agencies working together so that they would help these people get services that they need. I'm not a stranger to homelessness. I had a period of homelessness in my life, and so I have compassion for these people. But on the other hand, I also don't want to go into the drive into Safeway, all of the stores in the area, and now over at Walmart, and be accosted by people. So I have a couple of little incidents. One is that at the Higgins parking lot a few weeks ago, there was a woman laying on the ground right by the Taco Time, by that new business there, and there was a young man next to her holding a sign, need chocolates and tampons. I think that's disgusting, and I don't want to see that, and I don't want my children to see that either. Okay, and I think it's unnecessary. Anyway, I don't know about constitutional rights either, but it's loitering. Okay, the next incident was at Safeway, where I had a couple with their two young children come up and stand outside of my car while I was opening my door and tell me that their water pump went out and that they needed like $29 to buy a new water pump. And so, or else they needed a ride home because they were desperate to get home. And so I went so far as to call my son and ask him if he would come down and give these people a ride home, because I don't give people money ever. So, so they're like, okay. And so I said, can I go in the store and buy your kids some ice cream? So I go into the store to buy the kids some ice cream, and then I see this couple with their children scurrying off. They didn't have
a broken water pump. About 4 days later, I was at Walmart, and I had another person tell me the exact same story. Our water pump went out, and I said, yeah, right, buddy. Okay, so, but the scary part about that was that if I was getting out of my car right here, they were right there next to my car, and I couldn't get out until I, like, talked with them or said, oh, hi, you know, or whatnot. Okay, so those are my two incidents. I know that they have a no panhandling and a no loitering ordinances that they've established in Arlington and Marysville and Sultan, and from the reports that I heard, they seem to be working really well. So again, I'm not without compassion, but I also don't want to be accosted in the parking lots. And I do appreciate everything you guys did. I don't know if anybody here is able to go on Facebook, but I did, my husband Bill and I went down to Al Borland Park where we often walk, but we haven't been there for a while. We went down the other night, we took pictures, I posted it on Facebook, it got a lot of likes, the park is clean, it's lovely, so thank you.
Thank you.
The next person that we have that is signed up to speak is Melissa Holmes. Ms. Holmes, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Melissa Holmes, and my address is 19517 113th Street, Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98290. And I'm also talking about the panhandling issue. My husband, when we first, were kind of in the area, he was approached by somebody, and asking for some gas money, and I told them, well, that's not what they're asking for. They're not trying to get gas money. So I told them, you better go back and find out what he's actually getting. And my husband was like, oh, no, don't worry about it. So he went to the store, and sure enough, he came back and said, well, no, he was getting cigarettes. So we know what the money was going for, and this seems to be happening all the time. But my issue is we go down to the town a lot, during the day, and we go to fast food restaurants and we sit there because we kind of like to relax and just kind of sit in the town and kind of watch things happening and stuff. And every day, we see it every day, all over the place, being approached, by people being approached by other people. We see, we tried to go into Taco Bell one time and we couldn't get in because for a few days we tried to go to Taco Bell and there was a guy out there with some pit bulls and, just asking for money from people. And we're like, well, I don't even want to go in there. So it's just, it's to the point now where we don't even want to go into some of these places that we would really like to go into. So some of the things too, I know there's a lot of issues with, Al Borland Park, there's a lot of stuff going on in there, and I'm not about, I'm more about the aggressive panhandling. I don't have a problem with, there's a lot of, people with some problems and issues with homelessness and things like that, and I feel for those people too, but I basically went online and I printed out a lot of reports that are from other police departments that for solutions to some problems that they've done, which some of the things would be like surveying the townspeople, surveying the area and finding out what problems they've been having, because I think a lot of it is just kind of getting yourself, finding out what's happening around the area, because I think this is going on. Maybe some of you guys aren't aware, maybe you are, I don't know. Signs on the business is another good idea that, just get the businesses kind of involved and get them having some signs out there so that maybe some of these people out there aren't even aware that they shouldn't be standing in certain places, that maybe in front of the building and keeping us out of there. Having the paper, just the Monroe Chronicle, educating people in the community and, letting them know what we should do. One of the things I could do is, instead of handing out money to people, handing vouchers out to people, vouchers to different places in the community that they can go to instead of, getting money for gas or cigarettes or whatever they shouldn't be getting money for, getting vouchers to food and things like that. So there's a lot of these things are in these papers that I printed out for you guys, and so I just wanted to give my 2 cents and everything. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next person that we have signed up to speak is Madison, is it Wentz?
Warner.
Let's go with Warner. Ms. Warren, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
My name is Madison Warner. I'm one of the homeless for Evan Row. All I really like to say is that if people really have such an issue with panhandling, maybe they should act in the community to help us get jobs. We can't really get jobs when we have no place to stay because we're constantly battling to get money to camp somewhere or move somewhere else. The cops have literally taken the only pair of pants and my only coat. I have no way to get a job if I can't pay for the clothes that I need to go to a job interview, because I can't go to a job interview obviously looking like this. I think that it's stupid that people discriminate against us because we're homeless. I've been
been able to get a job interview since I've become homeless because people discriminate against it. When you arrest more people for panhandling, all it does is make people want to panhandle more because they have to pay the fines for the court. They can't get a job. We don't have the resources to get a job or to live anywhere. They tore down all our places even though we weren't bothering anybody, calling it trash. All the cops around here do is insult all the homeless. That's what everybody does. It would be nice if someone would sit down and actually talk to us, because I'm tired of, honestly, me and my boyfriend and everybody else around town being slandered on Facebook behind our backs, being threatened just because we decided to sit somewhere so we could get something to eat. Because no, it should be our right to be able to live. And we have nowhere else to do that. Instead of spending money on the sidewalks, I honestly think that Monroe should have built a homeless shelter, because the cold weather shelter doesn't allow my dog in there. I shouldn't have to get rid of my dog so I can live somewhere. Thank you.
Next person that we have signed up to speak is Donna Olson. Ms. Olson, please state your name and address for the record.
Hello, I'm Donna Olson. I live at 21902 132nd Street Southeast, Monroe. I am a board member of Take the Next Step. We're a grassroots faith-based nonprofit located at 202 South Sams here in Monroe. And our mission is to offer friendship, health, and hope to our neighbors in need, predominantly individuals and families who live in poverty and homelessness. We agree that poverty and homelessness are an increasing concern in Monroe. 2 years ago, we had less than 6,000 visits to our community drop-in center, 34% of whom were homeless. Last year, we had almost 8,000 visits to our drop-in center, and the percentage grew to 47%. We also saw 800 homeless children. And it's not difficult to fall into homelessness. People living in poverty are one mishap away from becoming homelessness. A single mom with two kids working full-time at minimum wage will not even earn enough money to come up to the federal poverty line. Working full-time, they still live in poverty and are often on the edge of where the slightest thing gone wrong can make them homeless. 70% of the children attending the nearest elementary school here in town live in poverty, and we believe that that's a reflection of many of the families that live in our downtown Monroe. When we look at individuals who are homeless and look at and visit with them individually, we find that many complex issues lie below the surface. We are not wanting to enter into a debate on the issues of homelessness and poverty that have been here in this community and in other communities. They are just becoming more visible right now. But Take the Next Step is here to offer and to ask to be included in the process and dialogue as our community works to address the issues that surround poverty and homelessness. We have 10 years of experience, knowledge, and expertise working with the poor and the homeless. And we are ready and willing to work hard to make Monroe a safe, comfortable, peaceful community for everyone.
Thank you. Next person we have signed up to speak is Terry Zonick. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record, please.
Hi, I'm Terry Zonick, and I'm one of the homeless. I've been homeless since age 15. I was abused. I've been around drugs, but I don't do drugs. I had my house, my tree house, torn down. It was sitting there for 10 years. I lived there, this would be my second year living there. They tore it down. They said that if I were to be staying there, I'd be illegally camping. I was not in the park where I'm at. Where I was a flood zone. The city tore it down. They told me that they were gonna build a joggers park and a biking park. And there is no way in hell you could build a jogging park out on that island. At all. Whatsoever. They took everything I own, all my clothes, my blankets, my lanterns, my cook stoves, my food. The only thing I got left is an empty backpack and what I'm wearing now.
This is public comment. This is where we listen. We'll probably put this down as a discussion item later on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak this evening? Robert, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
My name is Robert Smiley. My address is 18919 81st Avenue West, Edmonds, Washington. Does that still allow me to speak? I understand the situation that's going on here as far as the homelessness and panhandling and so forth. And I just want to put it out there that other communities have taken notice. And before people react too rash, they give some of the organization an opportunity to come in here and make some change. On July 16th at 202 South Sam Street, a board of us, it's called the Snohomish County Homeless Task Force. It's of all the leaders in human services, BOA, Catholic Meeting Services, Evergreen Manor, and all these other resources are coming together. And we're meeting here in Monroe specifically because I've asked some questions. I want to see if we can't solve something here that could be duplicated in the other cities. And we've got some pretty promising answers. But before we take any drastic measures against anybody, I'm just hoping that we have the opportunity to try and work with them. There is an answer out there, and it's just waiting to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like
to? Mr. Smiley, if I may, excuse me, will that meeting on the 76th, will it be open to the public person?
If you're resource oriented, it's at 10 a.m. to 12, and it's not so much for people that are looking for services that day, but rather service providers getting together on how we can coordinate
right.
to tackle trading off. My goal is I'm going to get one of these different organizations coming to Monroe once a day and dealing with assessments, getting some evaluation of how the housing, mental health, but they're not all capable of doing it on the same day. So it's fine. They're just the people that make the decision on who can come, what day, when, what services we can provide, transportation, and how we're going to approach this. One of the things, maybe this is time to mention it, is I'm looking into some pods. Containers. And it's not like we're looking to open up a tent city here. I'm looking to try and see if we can't work something out with a mobile transitional housing. Basically, it'd be containers that can hold 2 to 4 people so that people that are homeless can move into these containers just for 20 to 30 days in this city. And in that time, all the resources would be able to come out and speak with them, but also Catholic Community Services has already volunteered 2 vans that they'd be able to drive them around to all the places that I usually go on a daily basis to get their ID, to get their vouchers, to get housing, to go look, go and interview, get jobs, get clothing. And then after the 20 day or whatever, if we can agree upon something like that, they come up and they go. Hopefully that would be but then we'd have access to the people that are in need of help. One of the questions I posed to you in the parking lot is if you were to take yourself, and if you needed help, and it was in Everett, and you had no money, no car, no job, no internet, no cell phone, and people weren't willing to help you, how would you get your help? And that's a large problem with it. But not only that, but you folks, a lot of the folks that are homeless have also drug and alcohol issues, and which has a tendency to step on the thought pattern. So figuring out this problem figuring out how to do that is just impossible for most. And they've been burned by so many, they're not willing to reach out. So I've got a group of volunteers willing to overwork to prove they're willing.
Thank you.
You get it for yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else? Please say your name and address for the record. Thank you.
My name is Pastor Michael Lorio, and my address is 16024 173rd Avenue, Southeast Monroe. I'm also the youth navigator at Take the Next Step. I just want to reiterate that we absolutely support the rule of law. We absolutely support law enforcement. Our heart is for this community to thrive, and that includes everybody. But I feel it's important to state that for people who feel like they have no hope of changing their circumstances, law enforcement is not going to be a real positive preventative measure to make change in our community. We support that completely, and we understand that there is a need to make a difference. But if we're going to address this issue together, it requires us addressing it on a very multiple level, but also addressing it on an individual level, because each person that we're talking about is a person who has a story and has a path that led them to where they are. And so we need to address the fight with substance abuse, mental illness, physical and mental abuse. Those are all issues that lead to the woundedness and the hurt that cause many people to struggle to homelessness. And so we're just wanting to raise the voice to make this really a truly community effort together and try to respond to this on every level that we possibly can, because we do want to beat homelessness and poverty and issues of panhandling and all those things together.
Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Can I just say one thing?
Rosie, we do one comment. Sorry.
On homeless, just one sentence. The fairgrounds didn't have the bathrooms open all the time because they were worried about homeless people, and so it affects other things than we don't think of.
Okay, thank you, Rosie. And please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
I'm Christina Jorgensen. My address is 316 East Fremont Street, Monroe, Washington. I'm here on behalf of the panhandling issue. So I understand that people are concerned about the aggressive panhandling, and I recognize that that is an issue. And I do agree that it's not fair to you're walking into a store. Can you hear me? Okay. That you're walking into a store and that, you know, open up your door and somebody's right in your face. I do agree with that, but what I don't agree with is we can't ban panhandling altogether. People should have a right to, you know, if they want to sit on a corner, they should be able to hold a sign and ask for help. That's freedom of speech. And banning panhandling is not getting to the root cause of why these people are there. They're homeless, they are suffering, and we need to come together as a community to help them. So banning panhandling is not the solution. I know that other cities have done this, ban, you know, aggressive panhandling. We currently in Monroe don't have a law against panhandling. So I would just ask that you guys hold off and not do anything. Let us. I got to meet Robert Smiley today, and I hope that I get to work with him to come together and work to a solution for this problem. I came from homelessness, and I'm also a drug addict. I have 3 children. I have panhandled myself for baby formula, for milk, for food. And I also have overcome that, and I think that if we show support to these homeless people in our community, they can overcome it too. So criminalizing homelessness and behaviors that homeless people do, that's not going to help. That's not going to do anything. We're just going to keep driving these people to other cities when we really need to find a solution. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Christine. Anybody else? Okay, since we do have a number of people that are here this evening, and I did say that we could bring this back, why don't we go ahead and take a look at the extended agenda right now and have a date and bring back this as a discussion item. Oh, Councilmember Hanford, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, we'd definitely like to do that. A couple of things just wanted to address. Number one, if we can have the city attorney look into the actual legality and and precedents of banning all of that to even see if that's something that would hold up. A couple of concerns I have, obviously, if my car really does break down, I need a water pump. I want to be able to ask for help and not worry about being arrested for that. So a concern there. I wanted to bring awareness to everyone that United Way of Snohomish County, on July 9th, every summer they do what's called Project Homeless Connect. And it's held at Evergreen Middle School, 7621 Beverly Lane in Everett. And they provide free bus transportation all around the county. So you can get bus transportation from Monroe to this event. They'll be providing DSHS eligibility screening, Social Security eligibility screening, housing information, medical care, dental care, foot care, vision screening, eyeglass vouchers, pet care, haircuts, mental health assessment and brief counseling, substance abuse screening, hearing screening, all sorts of testing, and child support services, hot meals, and backpacks filled with toiletries. And so I say that because I want to make sure that the word is out there so that people can point them in that direction. As far as I think that take the next step, obviously we know that they're a tremendous resource for our city right now, and I think that coupled with the task force that's trying to meet to address this problem is going to, I think we're on the right path. We just need to continue down this path. It's not something we're going to solve tonight. It's not something we're going to solve maybe even this year. But it is something that we can tackle and aggressively tackle. I want to address the two homeless people that shared tonight. Thank you for coming and sharing. If you need clothes, I know personally organizations that can help you. So feel free to stick around after the meeting tonight, and I'll help you with that. If you can't do that, if you just give your name to Diane there in front of you and your phone number. Well, you don't have a phone number. Just let her know where you're at, and I'll try and help you out.
Thank you.
And I would note also to add to that that Robert's back there and can probably, and again, we have one comment, otherwise we end up with everybody speaking again, but I suspect that Robert can probably help you out also in, if everybody breaks up, I would recommend that you all take the next step, speak out in the lobby. We're going to go ahead and, if it's okay with council, we'll put this on the extended agenda for July 21st. It's a complex issue, as Councilmember Hanford alluded to and a couple of the speakers. There are some issues about how far we're able to regulate panhandling. When I was a council member, it was Councilmember Mitch Ruth at the time had brought forward regulation. Maybe it wasn't him. Somebody had brought forward a regulation for panhandling, which is the regulation that we have today. And so it would be beneficial to go over what the regulation is, understand what other jurisdictions are doing. And so we'll go ahead and put that on for the July 21st meeting. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I'd also like to have this added to the next P4 committee meeting on July 14th.
Okay. Okay, we'll put that on the P4 committee meeting on July 14th, you said?
Yes.
Got it.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it for comments from citizens now. And thank you all very much for coming out this evening and for sharing. This is a very important issue for all of us, which is why there are so many people here this evening. We are blessed with a community that has organizations like Take the Next Step, that has churches, that does things here in town. The Hands Up Project has been doing a lot and has helped us out with different folks that needed places to stay from Al Borland Park. So I really appreciate the community coming together and talking about this issue. And so again, thank you all for coming out this evening. We're going to go ahead and move on with the rest of the agenda then. The next item on the agenda, and if people would like to get up and leave, I will take about a 20-second break so you can get up without me talking. Maybe that makes you feel more comfortable. We're going to go ahead and move on now to the consent agenda. Council members? Councilmember Rasmussen?
Motion to approve the consent agenda. Second.
Okay, but first to Councilmember Rasmussen moved the consent agenda. Councilmember Camp seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is unfinished business. This is the agenda bill AB 15-108, discussion 2015 comprehensive plan update. Mr. Osaki. Councilmember Hanford, I think there's a seat over here.
Well, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, while this is actually warming up, let me just give a little bit of a background on where the Planning Commission is again. Planning Commission continues to meet on a weekly basis, and I got to give them a great deal of kudos for their initiative and patience to keep working through this process. They've gone through the goals and policies, they've gone through the action items, those tend to be the substantive items of the comprehensive plan, but they're spending some time, they want to spend some more time to go through the revised draft of the policies and goals and take another look at them. They've gone through the first and second chapters of the comprehensive plan, that being the introduction and the major goals and policy section, and really that was the important part to them because it really sets the tone for the balance of the document. But those are the first two chapters, and there's still eight more chapters in the comprehensive plan. But to speed this up, what the Planning Commission did was gave some guidance in terms of how they would like to see the document to be more readable so that the consultant can go off with some basic principles about readability, clarity of the document, really trying to write the document so it's user-friendly to someone that wants to read it. So at this point in time, I think a lot of the weight of getting this done through the Planning Commission rests with the consultant and staff to rewrite the balance of those chapters in some type of format the Planning Commission is going to be comfortable with. Last week, I passed out a letter from the Puget Sound Regional Council. Had a variety of comments. Some of them had to deal with housing, so I thought I'd spend just a little bit of time tonight talking about the housing element. I don't have a lot of slides. The housing element is pretty crisp. I mean, it's a pretty short document. It's a pretty short chapter. It has mainly data and tables with strategies and policies. The draft housing element is chapter 6. Housing element actually is one of the 5 required elements in the GMA comprehensive plan, the others being land use, utilities, capital facilities, and transportation. But it's one of the ones that cities have to prepare as part of their comprehensive plan. Just some background statistics. And the plan actually relies on 2011 data. There's approximately 5,500 housing units in the city of Monroe. 65% of the housing stock is actually single-family detached, which is actually pretty high for a community to have single-family detached housing at that level. 24% is multifamily units, and by multifamily, developments that have 3 or more units within a structure. A very high owner-occupied percentage of 72% compared to 68% is in Homish County. Nationwide, that's probably running about 60% to 65% right now. So very much an owner-occupied community here in Monroe. The housing stock tends to be pretty new. 44% of the housing stock was built between 1990 and 1999, which is means about within the last 20, 25 years, most of the housing stock was built. And only about 15% of the housing stock is 50 years or older. So what I want to focus on just a little bit is one of the items that the housing element typically will focus on is meeting the needs of lower and moderate income households and trying to address households that are burdened in terms of costs, the amount that they're paying for housing. And so the typical standard is if a household is paying more than 30% of its income towards rent and utilities and more than 30% of its income towards mortgage and utilities, it's typically cost burdened. And that means they're paying a lot of money and devoting a lot of money towards housing when they could be spending more money towards other items like clothes, transportation, or food. So 30% is pretty much the benchmark nationwide in terms of whether or not a house, a household is considered cost burden by virtue of how much it's paying towards housing. And in Monroe, in 2011, owner-occupied households, about half of the households that are owner-occupied, about half of the households that are renter-occupied, were paying more than 30% of their income towards housing. So you have a lot of people, at least back in 2011, spending a lot of proportion of their income towards housing that exceeds kind of that 30% income level. And so to respond to the Puget Sound Regional Council, they wanted a little more detail in terms of what owner-occupied and renter-occupied housing was in terms of cost burden. So here's a table that I think you'll find when the draft comes forward to you from the Planning Commission. It's a new table we begin to prepare. Left-hand column, income range. Next column, households paying more. That's the number of households paying more than 30% of the income towards housing costs. Total households within that income range, and the percentage based on that. So this is owner-occupied. So for households earning less than $20,000 that actually were owner-occupied housing, 100 of those households were paying more than 30% of the income towards housing costs. The total number of households within that category is 108, which means that 92% of the households earning less than $20,000 that actually have owner-occupied housing were paying more than 30% of their income towards housing. And then you can kind of work your way through the different income ranges. And it's really not until you get to about those individuals earning 70, or those households earning $75,000 or more, that it drops down to 15%. So 15% of the households in that $75,000 or more category were paying more than 30% of their household income towards housing. So overall, it actually is a good sign, because in 2011 that total was 50%, and by 2013 it dropped down to 37%. And I'm always, one of the items about using the data from about that 2008 even now is that this country went through a great recession. So in terms of the data, it's probably dealing with a economy that is much more different than this nation's ever had before, but keep that in mind. So this is the same table.
Mr. Osaki?
Oh, yes.
A second. Councilmember Cutterback?
What is a good percentage to have? So what is, what should a city shoot for as a good percentage?
Well, a great percentage would be zero.
Of course. Yeah, but I mean, ours was 37 on that last side in total average, right?
So the communities that I've been with, and I'm just going by communities I've been with, that number's pretty much on par.
The 37.
That's not a good number, right? It's not a good number to have. I mean, certainly.
Do they make recommendations?
There are no recommendations that I'm aware of.
Okay.
It's just a general sense of where your community rests. I guess to really do this, I'd probably have to go through different communities in Snohomish County and just kind of get a sense of
kind of how we
where Monroe sits with other jurisdictions.
I'm just curious.
The good thing about this table is that in terms of the actual number, most of the households that have owner-occupied housing, there's almost 1,959. So the bulk of the households that have owner-occupied housing are in that income range, and that's where the 15% rests. So that's why it drops down to 37% when you have such higher percentages in the other income ranges. And then this is the same table for renter-occupied housing. Again, much higher at 91% in that $20,000 to $35,000 income range. Why it actually is lower in the less than $20,000 compared to some of the higher income ranges, I do not know. And then certainly if there's a household that's earning $75,000 or more, that's actually renting a housing unit, it drops down to 3.6%. So certainly if you know somebody that's earning $75,000 or more is actually renting in the city of Monroe, then it's a very, very good chance that they're not spending more than 30% of their income towards housing costs. So just very briefly, there's a series of strategies and policies, and I just picked on a few that just to kind of mention in the housing element. Maintaining the older housing stock. Certainly older housing stock tends to be more affordable. You can do do that by good code enforcement in some of the neighborhoods that have older housing, making sure if there's new development, like commercial development around some of the older housing stock or neighborhoods that have older housing stock, you have good buffers and setbacks and landscaping to protect some of the older neighborhoods. Continue to plan residential development provisions in our code that allow for higher densities in exchange for greater amenities. Economic development, which to some extent gets at what you were talking about,
yeah.
Increase income.
Yeah.
Increase people's income within the community, and that allows them to provide or purchase
yeah.
higher cost housing or not spend as much of their income towards housing.
Mm-hmm.
A few other items, expand mixed use opportunities along Main Street with higher allowable densities. Look at increasing density through flexibility and street width, which means look at ways maybe not to have so much infrastructure costs as part of housing, and that might reduce housing costs, and encourage different housing types, so you're providing housing that meet the needs of a variety of different people in the community. And that actually is the end of the presentation, and I'm going to actually say that when I looked at the City of Monroe Code, there is a chapter in the zoning code on affordable housing incentives. That's a pretty strong chapter in terms of development incentives. It's tied to individuals or households with certain incomes. It actually allows for covenants to protect affordable housing for certain income types for a 50-year period. That's, to some extent, unusual for a community of this size to have affordable housing incentives that strong in your plan or in your code. And I'm not sure that comes across very well in the housing element, and I think we just need to do some adjustments in terms of the text. And so, I think the housing element is pretty strong. I mean, it's a pretty short document, but it's still pretty powerful in terms of trying to meet the needs of low and moderate income households in the community.
Mr. Saki, Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Mayor. Just looking at increasing density through flexibility and street width and sidewalks, how can you give me an example of how that would work? You had mentioned some briefly, I was just thinking, I'm trying to tie those two things together in my head, and I'm having a little bit of difficulty.
Well, in general, some places will have, and I'm not sure about Monroe specifically, but some communities will have, like, neighborhood streets 60 feet wide, sidewalks on both sides. So maybe you reduce it down to, like, 40 feet, 50 feet. So instead of somebody providing so much infrastructure in terms of building streets, the street requirement is small.
So by looking at those kinds of things,
perhaps more.
And I think we actually do that.
Chain Link Estates, Bear Mountain, and Bozeman Wendell, three flats have 58-foot wide right-of-ways instead of 60-foot right-of-ways.
Okay.
So the pavement width is narrower, so there's only parking on one side, which is the end result. So
that same type of thing.
That's how we've been doing that.
Okay, very good. I appreciate it. No, thank you.
Yeah. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. The only concern I had on that was, I know McFarland's there kind of near, over near the nursery area. Some of the streets are really narrow there, and if there's two-way traffic and two-way parking. So I wouldn't want to see a repeat of that. It's really hard to navigate. So I'm all for flexibility and all that, but every time I drive that road, I think, we can't have this. So I wouldn't want a repeat of that.
Typically, well,
I don't know
the specific situation, but many times you actually prohibit parking on one side of the street in order to avoid that type of situation.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but it was before my time.
All right, that's all we have right now. Go ahead and continue, please. Thank you. Council, any more questions or comments on the presentation? Councilmember Cutterback.
So in one of the comments, PSRC, they talked about the assessment of a special needs population and kind of addressing how we, you know, include additional policy. I didn't really see that in the housing element, so I've read through it, but what's the plan to address that comment? Or is it, you think, already addressed, we just have to make it clearer?
I think we need to make it clearer.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't, for example, I'm not sure the housing element talks too much about the elderly.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to, I think we need to make it more clear.
Okay. But you think we have
policies? And that can be done. Oh, yeah.
Policies to play that we just...
need to make it clear in this document that we're already doing some of this.
Right.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other comments or questions, Council? All right, thank you very much, Mr. Osaki.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is discussion, parking, downtown parking time restrictions. Mr. Cloudberg.
Still there?
What?
Thank you, sir. We've talked about downtown parking several times over the past few years. Most recently, from December through February, we did the 24-hour parking in the downtown area. That was done, and people came in to talk about that and said that they like longer than two because they don't really like the 24-hour parking. So this is the... This is the current parking downtown, and the thing of most interest is around Main and Lewis, so I'll zoom in on there. This is what it currently is.
Fred, can you hold up for just a second? I'm going to reserve. Yeah. Sure.
You have two, one says existing, one says future.
Thank you. By the time it gets to us, we'll be figured out.
There you go.
Thank you. All right, Brad, please continue.
Okay. So existing, the parking on Main and Lewis in the downtown core is two-hour parking with the handicapped parking spaces shown in blue there and there and there. The proposal that we brought to the council before is to change to four-hour parking with a few 15-minute spaces, basically one on each end of the block there and one at the end of the block there, keeping the 15-minute parking spaces here and here. So that would give a more variety of parking downtown, the longer places, spots for more leisurely shopping, longer appointments at hairdressers and things like that, along with some shorter times for the people who just need to run in and out. So this is just an opening for the council to have discussions and see where you'd like to go.
Thank you. One comment that I had received from the business owners right around West Main and North Lake, based on the west side of 203, was an interest in having a shorter parking stall at that corner on North Blakely Street. So that, just letting you know that as I was out meeting with businesses, there was interest in that. They've got a different kind of business there where it's helpful to have the 15-minute. And when I was out this weekend talking to folks, again, I heard anything from 2 hours to 4 hours. I also heard different businesses talking about how they don't mind it being a longer period of time at night. You know, you've got residents that are in the downtown, you know, from, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night until maybe 8 o'clock in the morning or something like that. It's okay that people are parked there for the full night. The issue is when the businesses are open. So that was another piece of feedback that I heard, that if we were to do something like 2 or 4 hours during business hours and then at night the restriction didn't apply, that was something that a couple of the businesses thought would be okay. Just some feedback from talking to folks this weekend.
Right. And then, as it is now, the 2-hour parking is from 8 to 6 downtown. So if we did the 4, we could do the same thing, 8 to 6, or slightly change back and forth. I also noticed one thing's missing on the map I got you, it must be an older version, is the Hill Street Cleaners has also asked for a 15-minute parking space on East Hill Street on the north side of the street, right by their really load and unload their vans. So that's also a thing that has been requested.
And I'll throw out one more, that in front of Angels Among Us on North Ferry at the intersection next to East Main, There was a request for a 15-minute stall there also. They're very much like the green grooming at North Blakely and West Main. Their business model has to drop off. Thank you. Councilmember Dan.
No, thank you, Mayor. And you said that North Blakely. Where in North Blakely were you?
North Blake at the
intersection. There was a, you had talked to someone that they were interested in a 15. Where, oh, that's right where your finger is.
Yep.
Sorry.
Let the record show that it's right where my finger is. So that would be
a south of the intersection.
That would be on the southeast corner of North Blakely and West Main.
There.
Southeast corner?
Yeah, right.
On Main Street?
Actually on Blakely.
Or on Blakely.
On North Blakely.
On North Blakely. Same right. It'll be the northeast corner.
This is Blakely first. This is
right here. Yes, we'll go with South Blakely.
Okay.
Sorry, the South Blakely was in the green and I didn't recognize that.
So we're right there? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing that I'd ask council to consider, right now we have a number of signs out there to identify parking, and I think it was our shared hope that we'd minimize the amount of signage that's out there. So if we can have something that's fairly consistent, I'd like to do something on the blocks where it's like four-hour parking this block, you know, just one sign on the entrance unless otherwise marked, and then maybe the 15-minute stalls on Main, East and West Main can be marked like that. We don't have a sign every other parking stall that kind of breaks up the sidewalk that we're trying to create out there, that openness. That's something else I wanted to share with you. Councilmember Hearing.
Thank you. I like what I see here in the future. It's a lot of hard work that's come together on this, trying to accommodate as many people as possible, and it's super, super difficult. We're making the best effort, except a lot of time, a lot of feedback on all this kind of stuff. I certainly hope to see, the ability to make this formal. The ultimate question, though, is, it's colors on the map at this particular time. Actual enforcement of it and the consistency of enforcement, I guess, is what that comes down to. And so it says 4 hours, and just things that we've heard before, it's 2 hours, and I know we have limitations in where our police department is and what they're doing, and they're working very hard. So from that standpoint, it's only going to be as good as the actual enforcement of it. Otherwise, it's a pretty picture, and so I'm sort of hoping that those two things will go together. A lot of time and effort up here, honoring the request of the business and making sure that, if it's 4 hours, it's 4 hours, right? That type of a thing where somebody's not, taking advantage of those kinds of things, where if somebody is, trying to game it, that we have a way to enforce that so we can get those people downtown, so we have the parking spots downtown so people can spend their money. And that would be my only concern, and not so much a concern, just that we actually have good and consistent enforcement of what we're trying to do here. Thank you.
Okay. Council? Councilmember Cutler?
Brad, thanks for all the work on this, and I agree, it's taken months and months, and we've done little experiments, thanks to the chamber, to kind of figure out whether there were no restrictions and how businesses and the public could react to that. We figured there was some issue with no restriction, or, free parking the whole time. So I like that we've listened to people and that we have a combination of some 15-minute spots, which some businesses wanted, the 2 hour, the 4 hour promotes people to stay longer and shop longer and visit multiple businesses. Doing it from 8 to 6 helps, I think, then solve if somebody wants to go have dinner and be down there for a longer period, or a resident that possibly lives down there can park overnight and move the car after 8 in the morning because it starts at 8. So I think this is a really good plan. I'm also concerned with the enforcement, because when we were looking at this and had a lot of public comment, that was one of the issues that we talked about at our P4 committee, is that enforcement is key. And that's what some of the business owners complained about, that what does it matter, there's no enforcement down there. So I think we need to have an in-depth discussion around what that looks like, and as we put this into play, that we have an enforcement plan.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Chief, if I may, I'd just like your opinion on this in regards to the enforcement that with this future parking plan, is there any concerns, kudos, or anything like that from your perspective that you'd take on?
Well, first of all, we have one park enforcement officer, but that person is also the air control officer, code enforcement officer, has many jobs. In 2008, I believe, the city laid off the other parking enforcement officer who had shared those multiple responsibilities. And I'll be very honest, parking enforcement is going to be very difficult with just that one person. Police officers on their everyday duties, primarily as far as parking enforcement, they will enforce handicapped parking. Beyond that, as far as police officers enforcement is very almost non-existent because they have other calls for services with higher priorities. And our parking enforcement person that does work works a 10-hour day. And if you park at a certain time of day and she does happen to be down there enforcing parking and chalks your tire, her shift may be over before she returns it, and it's out of 4 hours parking stall. So you just need to be aware that enforcement is going to be sporadic, as people have said, and we will do the best we can. We will enforce as best we can whatever you come up with. If you come up with no parking enforcement or regulations, that's fine with us. If you come up with 15 minutes for every parking stall there, that's fine with us. But just be aware that the enforcement of the parking regulations are not going to be approved until we have improvement in the FTEs that enforce the are able to enforce the parking regulations.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Just a couple of other items on South Blakely below West Main. We have that block just north of West Fremont to the right, to the east of the Triangle Building. There are four green stalls. One of those would be converted to 15 if council would be interested in doing that. The other three right there, they're green, which means that there's no restriction. And since they're in a commercial area, it seems like those probably should be 4 or 2 hour parking. That's a more commercial location than residential location. So I'd ask council to see if you'd be okay with converting those to either 2 or 4 hour parking for that short block just to the west. You see this right here, the Angels Among Us, I'm sorry, not the Angels Among Us, the Green Grooming. It's the same location I was telling you about before where I was calling it North Lakely, but it's South Lakely. Mm-hmm. So just north of West Main, just south of West Main, just north of West Fremont. Yeah, just to the right of the triangle, making
Full support, making me.
Yeah, so make one of them red, 15-minute, and that would be closest to West Main. And then the other ones make those yellow, which is the 4-hour parking. And then, again, that's because this is a more commercial area, and I've heard complaints about a truck that occasionally parks on that short street right there and doesn't get moved. Okay. The other comment that we've had before, and they came in and spoke when we were doing the temporary parking, was there's a mini mart on South Lewis, just south of West Fremont, where there was a request for 15-minute parking. So I respectfully request that a 15-minute parking stall be put there also.
Maybe the last one, right?
Yeah, I think exactly. The last issue.
Yeah, that's right in front of that mart.
Yeah. So if council's okay with that, I'd ask for those two amendments to this plan, or three amendments to the plan. The last thing that I'd like to have council think about is that
and I didn't realize that there was an hour component to this, but if we do four-hour parking, for example, on West Main Street, and the four-hour parking is from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., that would mean that I could theoretically park at 8 a.m. or I remain parked at 8 a.m. 4 hours later is noon. Okay, so that means I can park there until noon and you've got businesses opening at 10 or 11. On the other side of that, I could theoretically park at 2 in the afternoon. 4 hours later is 6, which means we're only creating a turnover of parking for a fairly narrow window. And so I would ask that maybe we consider widening that out so that maybe it's, I don't know, the hours are like 6 a.m. to maybe 11 p.m. or something like that. Something that makes a little bit more sense for the turnover that I think we're trying to achieve while still allowing for 4 hour parking. Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. Just from an initial reaction, I'd love to approve what we have first. Before we expand, I think we're dealing with the exceptions.
Okay.
I think most people are good-natured in that they're going to come, they're going to honor it, and they're going to take up. It's the you know, dealing with some of the, you know, this could happen, which is valid. I think 6 o'clock, 8 to 6 feels like a good time frame to start with. I think I'd be concerned about stretching into the 7 o'clock hour just yet, and maybe others have opinions on that. I'd like to see how it works, and if we need to expand it out from then let's do that. But I don't think as many people are going to gain the system as they would, you know, come and use it. So from that aspect, I'd like to see how it works before we start expanding it even farther. Because this may work just fine, and we don't need to. If there's just one or two people that are a problem, then let's deal with that. Again, those are just my thoughts on this.
And recognize this, the only reason why I'm bringing it up now, again, I didn't realize that it was an 8 to 6 window. I start doing the math in my head, and maybe I haven't thought it all the way through, but I'm looking at I parked at 2 o'clock in the afternoon the day before. 6 o'clock comes around. You know, even if I got chalked at 2, 6 o'clock comes around, I just keep my car parked there until 12 o'clock the next day. And before we order the signs, I just thought I'd bring that up. So, Councilmember Cutaback and Councilmember Rasmussen.
He was first.
Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen. Cutaback.
Thank you, Mayor. I think that's a great point, and Councilmember Gehring's point of going with what we have. My only hesitation with that is in regards to the signs, you know, and the cost being of the signs, that if we go ahead and order all these signs and then decide whether that be a year from now or whatnot, that we need to expand this. It makes sense to expand it. I mean, what are we looking at cost-wise? Is it substantial? Is it, you know, what are we looking at here? Is it better just to let's make the decision now and move forward with it and, you know, and try to put this to rest and let it go. So that's my only feedback on that.
Okay. Councilmember Cutaback?
Brad, what are most, I mean, 8 to 6 sounds reasonable to me. It's business hours. That's why I kind of look at it and go 8 to 6. It makes sense. So it seems like when I'm in other communities, it's 8 to 6. And that seems to work for other communities.
Yeah, there's some places where it's later, depending on what the nightlife is.
Yeah.
Mostly times when they have it, it's more 2 hour parking when it's that time, you know, so you can park from noon to, you know, I mean, from 2 to noon. If it was 2 hours, you could only park from 4 to 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, do you move it back 2 hours each direction and make it 6 to 8? Because then, you know, you're still not making somebody get up too awfully early in the morning because they can stay there till 10.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not late at night. If you, you know, if you live there and, you know, come home from work, you know, you can still park the car at 6.
Yeah.
So, or 8. You know, 4 hours for that is 4. So it's not a, you know, an unreasonable time. If you go to, you know, 9, that's, if you get up at 5 and get home, you know, you had till 9, it would still be okay. So.
So you don't really have a recommendation?
No, I don't think it would hurt to make it a longer period of time. It's not like
8 to 8
or 6 to 9 or something like that. Because it doesn't seem like it would impact people either way. Except get a couple more turnovers early and late.
Yeah. Chief, do you have something?
I was just going to say that with one person enforcing this,
yeah.
You make the time period longer and makes the job more difficult.
Yeah, that's a good point. At least a smaller defined time might be more manageable to possibly get somebody. So I'm in favor of doing the 8 to 6 based on that and just keeping it a smaller defined time so that if we do try to find enforcement outside of the police, it might be a more reasonable time to enforce it. So,
thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to think too. If I was like a second shift or a nighttime worker, and I get home, I'm not going to have to worry about waking up by a certain time and jumping in my car because we've made the time so big now. If you're a tenant downtown, you know, it's time to worry about something like that. I can't think of any other cities that I've been to where I've seen this. I'm just trying to recall all the signs I've seen. I don't think I've ever seen anything like as early as, you know, before even 8, I don't think. And in the evening, not past 6, but I can recall.
Okay.
So I don't think we have a problem. We have to worry about that at this point.
Okay. All right, thank you. Is there a motion?
It's listed as a discussion. I didn't know.
It is listed as a discussion. So how do we make this change then? Is it by
consensus? You know, you're happy with this, we'll bring back a resolution with the three changes.
So what we'll do is we'll bring back the resolution with the three changes. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks, Brad.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item then. The next item is item number 3, discussion H3O contract. And okay, Mr. Basil.
Thank you, Mayor. As discussed at the prior meeting, this is the part that H3O goes back and kind of better define their proposal. Since that time, it's hard to do so. In fact, we have to go back and run through the concessionaire's agreement and highlight the areas where they would be proposing changes. They've done that. They've got the information to us on Friday of last week. We have yet to have time to actually go through with a fine-tooth comb, kind of breezed over it as the city attorney. H3O is here this evening to go through that with you and answer any questions.
Councilmember Garen.
Great, thanks. Look forward to hearing from you guys since you guys are here. A couple questions on just from what I see right off the bat, and then welcome.
Thank you.
Again, thanks for coming. Glad you guys are still coming back. Trying to make this work. Just two terms that I was trying to figure out, look for a definition on. So rent commencement date. So is that essentially the opening? Yeah, I wanted to understand what that term actually meant.
So in the original contract,
right,
it was either the day we opened or it was a specific date. In that case, it was June 13th.
Okay.
So all we've done is now eliminated that hard date,
right,
and left it the way it originally was, which is when we open the park.
Okay.
And that's when the terminating agreement kicks in. Is if we get when we open the park for general use, then the agreement kicks in, and then everything starts moving forward with the contract.
Okay. And the concept of revenue capable. And that's what we originally had talked to Jeff Sachs.
And I need to stop you for a moment. We have a technicality. I need you both to introduce yourselves for the record so that if we're ever doing something in the future. So please state your name and address.
I'm Chris Hogan with H3O Partners.
I'm Brad Smith with H3O Partners.
Thank you both. Please go ahead. Thank you, Mayor. Okay. So,
by the way, one thing is we try to keep as much in the original language and concepts of the original lawyers intact and just try to work with these.
And I appreciate that the fact all the red text made really obvious, and the things that are different made it easy to go through and see what is different. There was a date that I wanted to ask about because it seems like a long ways away. December 31st, 2017, rent commencement date has not started by then. That just kind of seems like a, you know, I mean, that'd be about 2.5 years from now. I just, I know you guys are close. You've been looking for the funding. When I look at that, that's kind of the, I just figure you'd know before 2.5 years from now whether or not this is going
to happen. Really, if you look at it right now, we're trying to open up by next summer.
That's why 2.5. I looked at it from 2.5 years. I'm like,
we can usually go and say if something goes bump in the road,
right?
And then something stops for that summer unforeseen. Do we keep one more year? Basically, that's what that would do. That would give you one more summer to try to get it open. And if we fail for two summers, basically, if we give up, if we can talk about. It's not that we think we're going to. We don't want that date. We're going to tire ourselves.
I just want to understand where it's coming from.
We're just giving the contract the ability to live if we want to.
Okay. Yeah, and that just seemed like a long ways out. And I know you guys. There's been so much. There's been a lot of work done already. And you know, my understanding is, you know, getting those last investors going to open on this. Yeah. I mean, 2.5 years is. It just seems like
it's kind of out for the city potentially if we weren't able to get phase one going.
Right.
You guys can say, okay, we're done.
And it's just, it's a date that specifically says, okay, even though the first segment is 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, here we're cutting it off here, which ends up being 5 years, actually, I think, from 2012 when we originally started it. If this date was the cutoff, would have been like 5 years from when we originally started it.
Yeah, and obviously that original date was one that we didn't have in the original agreement.
Right.
It was became a sticking point with Jeff when we were working with him. And
okay.
He wanted a hard date in there, even though we knew we were still up against a few potential challenges in
right.
getting all of our approvals in place. And that's, of course, after that fact is when Army Corps of Engineers came back to us and threw us a real curveball. So that's one reason we said, boy, until we're revenue capable, let's make this so that we don't run into this rent issue. And it doesn't become another sticky point in the future that we know when it starts, you know, that's when we resume.
And I appreciate that. Section 1621, and so that's at the end, and it kind of talks about, okay, so if we're going to do this, you know, here's what the city gets out of it, back. And so it looks as though, and maybe you can just talk about that a little bit, it looks as though there's an extra exclusive day and no charge to the city, those kinds of things. And that seems kind of consistent with what we talked about before, but just maybe kind of how you guys came up with that a little bit. Sort of that, here's what you get. We're taking care of each other.
Yeah. Actually, I had a conversation with Gene a little bit, trying to figure out what would make sense for the public to get something out of this concession. And so those 12 days are in there, so that the city's going to be able to use this, well, the overlying area. We figured, well, one of those days, what the heck? Why don't we go ahead and give that to the residents to use the park? At our expense, we'll go and staff it. We've excluded things that that are accessorized, that could break or could be worn. So if the public can still rent if they want, but if they've got their own boards or if they want to maybe gate receipts, it'll all be free of charge, and we'll give the park up to the public. That's and we want to do that for multiple years. So we want someone to give back and give the community something that they're giving up that late. They can go ahead and use it free or try it out or see if they like it for the future. So.
Just for them, yeah.
The another change that I saw, at least from when you guys were here last time, I think Greg had done a little bit of the talking last time. I was pretty confident with the aid within 4 years we're going to have this, you know, the money generated. It looks like it's 5 now extended out. The number's a little bit more conservative. Just maybe you can talk about at least what we talked about last time. It was 4, now it's 5.
Sure. No, I think the intent here was obviously to look at the numbers, you know, and Jeff asked a poignant question last time.
Yeah.
And said, you know, can you see how this is going to be contributed back and how your plan works? And the plan is, again, to construct once we have our initial investors obviously do the phase one approach, and then the revenues would be retained through years 1 through 4 into 5 potentially in this case to give us maybe a little bit of buffer zone. at what point then 25% would be, you know, going back to help pay people's taxes, if you will, but the, you know, the adjustment pool would be retained as earnings to go into the new project in phase two when that's developed. And that's obviously, if you look at how the revenues flow through that, that's when it actually covers the cost of the phase two development.
Yeah. So I want to comment on that too, is that we could go ahead and develop many different scenarios and flood you with spreadsheets.
Sure, sure.
So what I chose to do is to show one spreadsheet that where because we're recommending there's a maximum five-year period, that what would it look like if we did it after 5 years? But as you notice in the spreadsheets, there's still a lot of retained earnings after the 5 years. Quite frankly, even the first 3 years, you actually see enough money if these projections pan out that we would be able to fund the building after
right.
3 years. But I wanted to go ahead and give you one shot that you could see that even if we miss drastically, there's still a lot of retained earnings that we'd still be able to continue the business after 5 years.
Very good. I appreciate that as well. One of the other concerns, and I mean, appreciate why you guys are here. We're doing the work.
Yep.
You know, technically, you know, the word reach, you know, is out there. And I know you guys are here to, you know, we're trying to make that right. Right. So appreciate the fact you guys are still trying to do it, still coming back. And that we still have a chance to really have these cool improvements to the park. So I appreciate the work that you're doing. Still trying to get investors. Hopefully soon. You said that next summer, which is just still seems like a long ways away. I mean, if it opened on Christmas Day, I'd suit up, right? I just you know, if we were to approve this, you know, next week, what, you know, if next. Getting the towers. I mean, what is it really next summer would be the realistic time frame? I mean,
yes, I mean, without a doubt. I mean, we have to target obviously the peak season. If you see how the again the revenues constructed, it, you know, being able to open for a certain amount of, you know, participants to actually come through the door is really kind of the key here. What we would most likely target in that case is once we know we have to go ahead, we would have to set a construction date to begin, and it would be looking to, you know, next May or so. I mean, it could have been a year like this, we could have gotten for April the way things have been, but taking advantage obviously of getting open as soon as possible, but using the winter months not only for construction but also to really hype the park through the boat shows and get people to know that it's happening, so that once the doors open, not only have we sold a bunch of season passes already, we could actually exceed our revenue number before we even open the doors, frankly, for that matter. And that would be the goal, certainly, to obviously hit the ground running. But the idea being is give yourself the best opportunity for success by opening at the beginning of that peak season.
The other thing you're going to want is the grading and all that will be disruptive a little bit, and having it happen more in January is going to be less disruptive to community than if we're doing it in the summer or something like that.
Okay. Especially the number of activities you guys have.
Let's say, you know, this was approved next week. What's a day that a shovel hits the ground and turns some dirt? I'm interested in knowing what that date is.
Certainly, obviously, as you get into the October, November, December time frames, you know, the wet part of dealing with the groundwork becomes a real issue. So certainly we would coordinate with, you know, the gentleman that we talked to on the dirt works as well as the general contractor, and we would discuss that with him. But I think he would probably want to work around those key months of the winter to get the best exposure. Now, I'm not sure what that means to when he wants to, you know, do the cut and fill portion of it, when he wants to, you know, set the pilings for the docks. I'll kind of leave that to them to make the decision, but, you know, I think we're very close on the money side of things to having that all locked up and ready to go. So in the end, I don't think that's going to be the sticking point going forward. And if you can kind of think of why that is, obviously this is all about risk. And being able to approach two phases of improvements to the site, phase one being half the cost,
right,
and it's backed up by physical asset in the towers, we now have lowered the risk profile significantly, especially with 4 years to actually have retained earnings built into the thing. So now the recoverable portion really matches up to what the investment would be. So we've already seen a huge difference in the reaction we're getting from the people we've been talking to. So that's the real benefit here, to be able to move ahead very quickly. And once that happens, I don't know if I can give you a drop dead date. We will certainly probably target early fall to try to get going, but it all kind of comes down to the construction schedule, when these guys want to actually break ground and deal with that. But I think Chris brings up a key point, and you guys have a lot of activities into the fall as well at the park, and we would have to work around that. So I'd obviously involve Mike in discussing what those dates are, taking that into consideration.
Okay. And at some point, I mean, there's just, there's either going to be investors or there's not, right? And so I see, you know, the way that that's built in here. And like I said, you know, it's, I feel like, you know, market factors, you're going to know sooner than later. That's why I was a little surprised. You know, then that's why I said the 2017 date seemed just a little bit
farther out. The investor, I'm not going to be looking panhandling for investors. Like the only and if we want to go, if we have to kick that date up to the end of 16, then maybe we go do that. But what it's giving is that if there's some kind of disruption that's unforeseen, because you know what? I've just gone through it, and I've just had the state ecology department back me up.
There's one thing after another.
So I've gotten used to the fact that I don't want to artificially constrain ourselves, but I also don't want to have something that's hanging way out in the wind either.
I also appreciate the phased approach. The building is important to people, and I know you guys heard us with that. It is something that is part of the original deal, and certainly look forward to that. So I appreciate the fact of, okay, we're going to deliver that. Here's what we're going to deliver by. And then there's also an out there as well. If we're not able to do it, then, you know, then that's the end of it as well. So I appreciate how you addressed that as well. And that's what it is. People talk about it,
too, is that if for some reason things break down in year four or year five, there's still the improvements we're doing. The start's still there. And the city has made its rent and royalty things that while we've been there. So the city's still going to get benefit for a shorter period of time, and which would be more commensurate with how long we rented the lake. But I'm still going with the long term, and that we want to go ahead and have the building definitely should go to the city if we can rent and have be successful for 10, 15, 20, 25 years.
And our belief is that realistically, if it actually does what we think it's going to do rather than what perhaps the numbers, the minimum numbers show, that we would be incentivized to actually move much more quickly to do phase two and get the full scope of things open and running. So.
And that's what Greg had mentioned last time as well when you guys were here. Things get rolling. You don't want to wait for the time frame. Here's the time frame, and if it's not, you know, there needs to be an end. I mean, market factors, right? It's not going to work out. It's not going to work out. And that seems to be built in here with that. So I do appreciate that as well. All right, I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, councilmembers. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
Just some questions about the December 7th, 2017. Our current contract, we're able to collect rent for you tying up the property. Currently, that's our current contract. So in this contract, the amended contract, we're suggesting that we forego any rent. That's 2.5 years away. And it looked like in the section that Councilmember Geary mentioned that we get to use one of our 12 days as compensation for this 2.5 years of not receiving any rent payment.
So,
tell me how you kind of came up with that.
When June of 2013 came around, we came to the council. We got about a 1-quarter extension to go out one more quarter. We, in good faith, were just hoping that permits and things were going to go work out. And we have to keep looking at, and I'll even tell you, there's a frustration clause in the contract that we could have terminated the agreement and said, hey, we can't pay this rent. We need to renegotiate.
Sure.
We can't come way out.
Yeah.
I actually got voted down. I wanted to exercise that. These two wanted to stay in it, and we did. And we were paying the rent in good faith, saying, hey, you know, let's just stay with the city. Well, we basically now paid in excess of, I don't know, $18,000, $20,000 of rent that we have not been able to produce revenue on. The original intent never was to go ahead and hold the lake. That June 2013 date got put in there because nobody on either side thought that we were ever never going to hit that number. We had investors. We had all the approvals of the city council. We had what we thought was going to be a relatively easy stamp with the environmental agencies. And when all that starts spiraling out of control. So quite frankly, from an investor perspective, and I'll take you and me out of the game and go to people who would want to put it in, they would never have signed a contract like that. It would have been more like the one that you see, saying that, hey, if it doesn't get off the ground, then we would go ahead and, you know, say, hey, there's got to be a date that we can be able to cut off.
And we would have signed it, just so you know, if we weren't given verbal assurances that would not have been enacted. It would have been delayed until we actually at least broken ground. But obviously, the people who said that are here anymore, so that's why we chose to proceed in good faith and pay our rent. But it came to a certain point where you can only bleed so much and you have to come look for another solution. You guys are faced with some bigger problems here, obviously, trying to solve homelessness and all this, but it's nice to see you have people that, you know, came forward and were looking for solutions. And we're faced that as a business.
Sure.
You know, hey, we want to go forward.
Yeah.
We're looking for a way to do it, to have this come out of the ground because it benefits both sides. How can we make that happen? And, you know, let's get the person, great people who are sitting, give us an idea how we might proceed.
My concern is tying up the lake for 2.5 years, and I don't know if getting one free day.
Can I ask you what you mean by 2.5 years tied up? It's a 6-month development process.
No,
but the time frame in here is we can cancel December 2017 if you guys haven't built by then.
So that is two and a half years away.
That's the time frame. So worst case scenario, it's 2.5 years, and then there's 5 years on top of that to build a building. So that could be 7.5 years out that we see what the original contract was intended, which was the full part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time frame. So worst case scenario. That's my concern so I guess my question to you, if you don't have investors currently, in my business sense, why not cancel the contract, come back, and, you know, when you have your investors, why go through all this and tie up property, still no assurances that you're going to be able to meet the timeline?
Less chicken in the egg. I don't have investors if I don't get city council, if I don't have an agreement, and you can look at it the other way.
We've had an agreement for 5 years. I mean,
to raise well over $1.5 million.
No, we actually had investors. We had investors.
And they
tired. They got frustrated. So I could have hit a frustration clause. Well, they frustrated on me with my clauses that said we don't have things in place or able to go. We're out. So when environmental agencies took us too far out, they said, I got to go park my money in some other commercial real estate.
Yeah.
It's going on fire, and I'm sitting here with my money in your bank account. It's not working for me. So that's what happened to us. And so now, and that put us into another new period of, well, now we got to go ahead and find new investors. And the new look that they're seeing is like, hey, the feedback we got was we're not getting in for $1.5 million without more shared risk. And I get it. I mean, if we were doing commercial development where we own the land and we could sell the land and everything is ours,
it's a different deal.
But this whole thing is the only thing that's of value that the investors can walk away with is towers. And if we put all that money, they put all that money down and something goes belly up, they're out a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so it's a lot, this actually looks a lot easier because they can get 40% of their money back on the towers, and they can retain a lot more equity by putting the money back into the thing. So everyone's got their equity, more equity, and less money in, and less risk. And this is what, once we lost our original investors and we were out there panhandling again, this is, that's what we've learned.
We actually presented this as a concept that we'd like to proceed as a phased approach. And we were told originally that, no, we'd like to see it all as one. And when we came back looking for a solution, that's where it kind of came up. Hey, this might still be an option. And that's how we got to where we're at right now.
Right.
It's getting to a phase, two-step phased approach to developing the site.
And don't hear me say the idea of a wakeboard park, it's a cool idea.
Yeah.
My concern has been the history of this contract. It's been about 5 years. Lots of bumps in the road. At points, not the greatest communication. We're extending it again. It does tie up the property if we amend this contract for possibly up to 2.5 years. And I don't see much compensated back to the city for the next 2.5 years. We get an extra day, or we use one of our 12 days allotted in the original contract, free use for City of Monroe, one day of our 12 days.
Just remember the compromise on that is that I know you're looking at as money in the bank, but we paid a lot of rent for no value so far. While, to put it from another perspective, we have been paying one government agency and having other government agencies stopping us. So we're literally, I know it's, you know, not your fault here, but we're literally paying taxpayers for taxpayers to stop us. And that's kind of hard.
On a site that generated no income ever before. So what they're, you know, let's talk about the alternative. You're saying we're tying up the lake. We're not tying it up for anything that isn't there currently.
You have a, but you have a right.
And there's been no proposal to do anything else with that site.
I agree with it. And if that time frame doesn't work, put it into the negotiation kind of things. And before we address any one point, we're going to want to know what all of them are.
Sure.
So, but Dean should note that, and we should figure out, you know, if that's the appropriate time or if we should come up with another time frame.
Well, for me, it might be the time frame, and then also what we get for. Because, again, in the original contract, for tying up that property, you had that property. We couldn't enter into another contract at that time. What you got was that property was tied up in that contract. You didn't get any revenue for it, but you had... But you could say you could sell that to your investors. So.
Well, while the contract was in place, you did get everything you were due. Now is another time. We're in a dead period. So from today, forward until this gets up, I agree with you. And that's where we're saying we need shared risk. And in the original agreement, we can't sign another agreement with another. Our investors are not going to go say, hey, we're gonna put a bunch of money in.
Yeah, I get that.
On a business that hasn't started generating revenue.
Right, I get that.
That's any business.
And then I didn't see anything in the contract, and I'm not sure where we're at with this, about making the current contract where we're at whole, catching up. I don't know if that's a separate discussion.
We had a discussion about that in January when we started this conversation, and it was suggested that, hey, pay up till the date, the end of January, so you're current, and then submit the letter saying we're going to then get into a discussion about this.
Okay.
It's taken some time to develop this to this point, but that's the dead period he's describing. So technically, we are current based on the agreement that we had in place at that point as we started this conversation about a phased approach and how we can look for another way to get this out of the ground and have a contract discussion in the meantime about what that looks like, you know, physically, what it looks like from an agreement standpoint, and then be able to proceed.
And then my last question is, you included the city of Snohomish having that free use day, and I was curious. Lake Tahoe is supported by Monroe taxpayers.
So that doesn't have to be in there.
Okay.
That's
your question.
We want to extend it to the people of this
region
here, because
we
literally have to be able to
go
to
the whole
council.
But I don't know how friendly you are, but you don't have to do that, city. That can be just your city.
Well, I think that's worthy of a discussion with the intent of council. And
we're flexible on that.
Yeah.
And clearly, obviously, the gentleman spoke up in opposition from Snohomish.
Yeah.
So, there's an interest there, clearly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's it for now. I'm curious to hear what other council members think.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Joan, thanks for coming. I guess my biggest concern is your track record. And you make this agreement, pay the rent, usually late, based off the information we've been given. Granted, late charges have been paid, but now we're looking at this and saying, we can't meet the obligations we agreed to because we're not generating revenue. I understand. I get it. But, it's still the agreement that we agreed to. And I cringe every time I'm hearing that it's because of someone told you something that's no longer here. And I've heard that quite a bit tonight. Hey, you guys signed it. I mean, plain and simple, you signed that agreement. I mean, I don't know if he's...
There's only one response I can give you to that, is that there's a frustration clause in there. We could exercise your clauses to knock us out and default. We can end it, okay? I don't want to. I think there's a lot of people here who don't want them either, okay? And I don't think, personally, I don't think we've been that bad a partner. I think that we, without much help from the city of Monroe, have been dealing with, not here in this room, but dealing with the ecology departments and dealing with the feds and dealing with lots of permits and going through the whole process.
Which, what's your expectation from the city of
Monroe? I'm not even asking to do anything. We've been doing that very hard. A lot of effort and nailed every single bit of it through, quite frankly, not easy red tape, but appeal after appeal, and got it all through. So we've done a lot, and we were paying rent to the city in good faith while we were doing that, 100%.
Because that's what you agreed to do. That's part of the agreement.
Yeah, and however,
there's also a clause in there that says we could have enacted this frustration clause.
At that point.
So we're not going to pay rent because we don't have to, because Army Corps of Engineers has delayed our project.
I realize you could have pulled out of it.
But we didn't do that.
He's insinuated it a few times, and it is true, to them anyway, I wasn't there at the time, that members of the city council who are no longer here said that we would never have to pay rent if we were not open.
Or at least until we broke rent.
And so we've just let that bygone be bygone. And we have gone ahead and still paid the rent, even for over a year, year and a quarter, even with that handshake. Shame on us for doing that, okay? Shame on us. But it's not, we weren't bad business partners.
But now you're coming back to us and saying, give us another 2.5 years. Maybe it'll be sooner, but 2.5 years. And given.
Okay.
We came back and said, can we still find a way to make this happen? And what options are still on the table, because we cannot continue to pay rent.
If 2007 is the issue, we're going to figure that one out. That's not going to be an issue.
Yeah.
If there's a credibility issue, we need to talk some more.
So I'm looking at that data just as what's been brought up already, and I'm concerned of that as well. I mean, the fact that I couldn't even really answer the question of shovel hit in the dirt, what would happen?
Have you ever been involved in a construction and building process?
I have, actually.
I mean, there's delays all the time. In fact, I couldn't think of a project that isn't impacted in some way by both the finances and the timetable every single time.
But most of the people I've dealt with have a better idea than, we still got to talk to this guy and still got to talk to that guy.
No, good point.
I mean, come on. You got to have a more narrow time frame that if we were to, you should be able to have someone on your side that you can say, hey, look, if we got this agreement,
we do.
On this
we have the
time, what are we looking at? And that's the question that I heard being asked, and you couldn't answer.
You know why? We actually have the schedules, all right, from a ground one break and what it's going to go take to do that. But if you can't give a contractor a firm time frame, I want to start in a month from now. I want to start in 6 months from now. They've got to go look at their subs. They've got to look at and schedule all that out. They know what it is. We know what it's going to take. We know what the long poles are, the short poles are. That's all well and good. But I'm not going to go tell you right to your face right now that says, hey, we signed this, and I have the money in the bank. I can start in 3 weeks. Because no, that contractor is going to have to go get all the subs lined up, put it into his schedule. And I'm confident right now, if I was ready in 3 weeks, that we're going to have no problem getting it all scheduled out and getting ready for next June. But I don't want to give you a fake date right now. I'd be lying. And I don't think you could get it either out of that. Any contractor, if you don't give them the generic, when is this going to take place?
I guess my other concern is, if this goes through, I'm looking at the renewal term, and I understand that maybe this was carried over from the previous contract, but I'm looking at this, and I really just don't see any out for the city, and Gene or Zach, I'm not sure, and I know you've not had a chance to thoroughly look at this, so I'll be weighing on it, but, I mean, the outs tend to lean more towards you as a concessionaire that can't meet the financial performance or identify public safety, or the city identifies a better use for it. I mean, that seems like that's the only way it weighs out for renewals. I'm just saying that I think it's too strict for on the city.
Nothing changed on that. That was an agreement.
I understand that. And you heard I acknowledge that. But again, I can voice my concern there too. So, those are my main concerns. Going this long without, the charter rank history, looking at another 2.5 years, not getting what was initially the improvements, not getting the initial improvements that were agreed upon, bothers me too. So,
not getting them day one, but we're not advising you where to go, just to be clear.
What's that?
We're not giving you on day one, but just to be clear, we're not backing away from all of them either. They're just on a longer time.
Sure, they may or may not come though. That's how, they'll come in phase two if phase two happens. Right?
It's got to be a successful park. And quite frankly, just to be honest, shame on us then. If we put $1.5 million in and we only ran the park for 1 year, the city got an awful lot of rent for something that they didn't necessarily deserve.
Inside improvement.
So.
You have to remember, we're hundreds of thousands of dollars already invested in this. You don't think we have an incentive to move forward? We do.
I believe you do.
And the rent is
to have it make it work, not for a 4-year period.
Now, the rent
to make it work for a long
like
year.
Nothing compared to the 300 plus thousand we paid to get approvals from legal departments and colleges and feds and everybody else and construction companies.
So I have
no.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. First, I just want to apologize for the misunderstanding of with the previous council members or handshakes or whatever took place. I was trying to think through. I've been on council, I think, for almost 5 years, 4.5 years, and I know I was here when you originally came with the project. I never had the understanding that there was going to not be rent paid until you open the doors or broke ground or whatever, but that's all behind us. Sorry that happened. I think everyone's disappointed. Obviously, we hear your pain, we feel your frustration. I think you feel our frustration. I hear frustration from city residents all the time. When are they going to open? When are they going to open? What's wrong? Why isn't it done? And all I can do is, shrug. So I think the only concern I had on there was the city of Snohomish, which you brought up.
Yeah.
This is an agreement with
Exit.
The city of Monroe. And so, as a...
We're fine with that. Really.
So
it actually costs us less if you think about it.
Yeah. So if you want to do like an advertising day, to try and boost the numbers and open it up to area residents, including Snohomish as well, on a different day, that's great, but I didn't have a good feeling about that, but it's frustrating on all accounts. Nobody else is coming to city council with or the chamber that I've heard of or anyone saying, well, if that doesn't work out, can we run a business? Can we rent out kayaks and paddle boards? I haven't heard from anyone saying that there's anyone knocking on the doors as a backup. So in my eyes, if we can get this done, let's do it. And the sooner the better.
Love it. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. I'm going to acknowledge Mr. Brazel and then we'll go to Councilmember Camp.
Yeah, I just want to clarify two things for Council. Parks Director Farrell did comment that construction probably couldn't start this summer because we already had the park booked for events in that exact location. So that's not likely to happen if the Council entertains moving forward with this. And the other thing I just want to clarify is that next week we will have a proposal coming in from our existing concessionaire looking to rent kayaks at the lake.
Councilmember Kemp, you have the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming here tonight. Most of the points that I was going to make have been made by the others. I keep thinking about the history because I've been here since day one. And from the start, the benefits of this project were just immense for the city. The attraction, getting us out of the gas and go mentality to an actual destination. Looking at this new contract, and also the fact that this has been a moneymaker for the city with a limited risk. I mean, the fact that you've been paying rent for, I don't know, 2 years. And essentially, we've provided, if I understand correctly, we have provided nothing other than just the time and the availability of the lake. Okay. That's okay. I watched you work through the process. I watched all the hearing examiner issues, everything that happened, all the hard work that was put into getting this project off the ground as much as it went. And I can understand your investment issues you have. Again, the benefits for this project are too great. The one thing I really like about this contract is the fact that it gives us a date. It says, if you're not done in 2.5 years, we're done. Because like Councilmember Hanford, I have been receiving questions from people, when's it going to come? I have been telling people that for 3 years. Same question. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I questioned 2.5 years. I was thinking a year and a half might be better. I will leave that for council discussion, just to see if we're going to get this thing off the ground. If we're not, I appreciate all the effort. And we could move forward. If 2.5 years is a better decision, or if council is more comfortable with allowing that much time, I don't have that much of a problem with it. I'd like to see this continue. I'd like us to be able to provide this service for our citizens, for our visitors. That would be my goal. I appreciate your effort in it. Hope council will see that as well when we look at provisions in the future and go forward from there. Thank you.
Councilmember Guerin and Councilmember Rasmussen.
Great, thank you. Again, so much of what is in this contract, a lot of hard negotiations that went on 3 years ago, 2012, I believe, is when we started this, and you guys are still there. And again, like I said at the beginning, obviously you've got a lot of money in. You want to make this work a long-term thing. And from that standpoint, I look forward to whenever we can bring this back, have our attorney look at it and as quickly as possible so that we can do it. I was also aware that there may be, I had heard some talk about something else coming, like a kayak rental through town. I see that. One separate issue, but certainly is complementary to what you guys are going to do.
And that's part of our original business plan as well. So,
and whether you do or not is neither here nor there. Let's focus on getting the campus going, right? Exactly. Yeah. You know, and we can maybe leave kayaks to others. But I see that, you know, potentially as something or just a compliment, just another great thing potentially. And I know that's a separate group of folks that may be coming. But I think of what you guys are going to bring and the potential of that. And I get excited about what it could be. What it will be, quite frankly. So, from that standpoint, as far as next steps, I'd like to certainly have this on a future agenda after our attorney has had a chance to look at it. If there's going to be actual negotiation, then I think that probably takes place in the executive sessions and the contract. So we'll need to have that on the schedule as well when our attorney is here, so that we have that tonight. I don't think that's on necessarily tonight. That might be a couple weeks out, but just as long as we get something, we need to keep moving and getting that on the agenda as quickly as possible to continue talking about it. So and getting this hammered out so that we can move forward so that it is next June and not any later than that. So we don't like, yeah, I understand why the 2.5 years, you know, if jumped through so many hoops at this point, it's like, okay, man, you know, it's gotta, we're close. You know, I know you're close.
Absolutely. And to address kind of the concern you mentioned, the time, the date.
Yeah.
You know, certainly we can never tell the contractor what day and so forth, but
right,
we need a 6-month construction window. So if you do the math backwards,
exactly.
October.
Yeah.
October is when we'd like to make sure we're off and running.
You gotta shovel
everything in there.
Yeah.
dirt set. In fact, it's probably because of the simplistic grading that's part of phase one. Yeah. It goes much faster, most likely, and that being the case, it's really about the tower delivery at that point.
I appreciate the help that the city does have it here. It's certainly to our benefit, this contract from that standpoint. And so lots of outs. It's a benefit to both. And I look forward to getting this on the agenda as soon as possible so we can get it finalized. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I just feel 2012 was a different time than what today is.
2015.
We're in a different financial situation today than what we were then, and I believe back then, we didn't, obviously when we sent out that RFP, we had one respondent, or I should say when the city sent out that RFP, there was one respondent. I think if we were to send out a recreational RFP today, we might have a different story. It might not be multiple wakeboarding parks, maybe just the one again, but there would be, I feel that there's a better chance of having additional options. And so just because no one is knocking on our door saying, I won't do anything because someone's already there, doesn't mean that they aren't there. We just haven't asked for it. So another way to look at this is we have the opportunity to ask for that. And if it comes back that H3O is the only one to respond, they're the only ones to respond. We can continue on. It's not really going to delay it a whole lot, but it's on our terms. So. But I think it's worth asking the question and putting it out there. So that's just my thought.
Councilmember Davis.
Sure. Thank you guys for coming tonight and answering any questions. This issue was like one of the first things I voted on. As a new council member, and I voted against the wakeboard park. That being said, when we look at the history of all that's gone on, I understand that what happened here and the roadblocks that you ran into, and who could have figured that was going to happen? Corps of Engineers, ecology, I could have predicted that maybe, but the economy, et cetera, it was just, it's all been tough for me, and it's been hard to navigate that. I think you guys have done a lot of work on this, and I commend you for that, and although I still would prefer to have just a plain lake. I'm not willing to just turn my back on all the work and the money that you have spent on this. The decision was made. I disagree with it, but it was made. And you guys, in good faith, moved ahead and have worked hard on this. You've had some hard luck on it, and that wasn't your fault. It wasn't us. We were supporting you all through this. That given, I'm still supporting you in that vein of thought, and I'm not going to pull that support out from you. I'm for giving you another shot at this, and I'll go along with this.
Thank you, and that's greatly appreciated.
I think it makes business. There's business sense in this, and I agree with what you're saying about the. I saw the dates and I went, oh, that's, it's 2.5 years and 7 years total. That makes me a little nervous, but I understand what you're saying. And I think that your idea is you don't want to go that route. You're doing the best that you can to make it happen as soon as possible. And I understand that there are extenuating circumstances that aren't going to let happen to next week or next month, and I agree with that. So I'm in support of this, and I think we should at least give. I see you thrashing out there in the lake, and I'm willing to throw you.
I'll take a boom.
Because, you know, there's very little risk involved for the city, I think, to throw you that way, preserve, and give you a little bit of time and a little chance. But I think we're running out, and I think the frustration we're hearing here is we are running out of time. We are getting pretty thin on this. And if we can't make it in the next year or so, I think it'll be another shot. But I'm willing to give you your motion. That's where I stand.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm just curious. So between the time the RFP was sent out and the contract was signed, how long did that take?
Well, over a year at that point.
It was over a year?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so...
Yeah, because we did several presentations on the concept at a cable park with the RFP once we moved forward, and then so the approval, I can't remember when that came through, but and then it was a significant amount of time after that, going back and forth with Mr. Well on working out the details of the contract, so that took a significant amount of time too. So
and you also have the Corps of Engineers.
Well, that was after really we already had a finance or money in place.
In addition to
the Corps of Engineers
time.
Yeah, the Corps of Engineers told us that they weren't going to need to look at it, and this right. is where this frustration came in, is we were really ready to go at that point, and then they came back because of a letter generated by a gentleman at the Department of Ecology that was part of the Swan Society.
I remember.
And they reviewed that letter and decided to reverse their decision and said they needed to look at it.
Right.
And with the sequester situation that was going on with the government at that time, it further delayed when they could actually get to that project. They had a huge stack and backlog at that point. So we were significantly delayed before they could get it. And of course, the people we had in place as investors decided to put their money elsewhere.
The Army Corps furloughed 60% of their workforce during that sequester, which just took our 2 month window into 6 to 8 month windows.
So we were
in excess of a year. Well, in excess.
It doesn't take too much to throw the timeline so out of whack.
Yeah, just want to check.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. The first question, if we were to request letters of commitment from investors, is that something that you can provide?
I believe so, before breaking ground.
One of the things that happened before was there were permits that were required that you didn't anticipate would take as long as they did. You ended up losing investors. Before the contract comes back to council, would it be possible to get letters of commitment or something from investors to show that you have investors that have signed on that will help make this happen in the near term?
I think we can offer a certain amount of disclosure. I think it's going to be tough because here comes a sequencing issue of an investor offering his commitment in a letter before he knows if the city is going to approve.
Okay, but you have a contract right now. So without... Okay, but you're talking about
contract.
Phase one, phase two. The point being, you could have a letter structured in such a way that there's an out clause in the event that this doesn't get signed on. Is there some assurance that you can give the body to indicate that you do have people that have signed on to this right now?
I know you get some, most likely. I'm not sure. I can't speak for them. I guess in the end, it's not comfortable it would be.
I see what you're asking. Yeah. I don't want to overspeak until we actually ask them.
Okay.
And one of the positions, just so you know, is actually an equity position for one of the developers or the contractors at the site who believes in it enough that he's going to put his work in
for
his part of it.
Equity, yeah.
So just know that that's probably the fairly easy one to get. The other one, there's how much disclosure I can have there because the name would be very recognizable. As someone involved, I'm not sure how he would feel about that. I'd have to discuss that with him first.
Okay. Your permits you currently have, what are the expiration dates for those?
My understanding, per conversation with the city, that we've extended those now, so we have at least past another year. I think the Army Corps of Engineers is 5 years out. The shoreline use permit, we did it for a couple years, and then there's one that we just recently sent a letter in extending, so I think we have another five or six months on that one.
Could you get us a list of the permits that you have for the project and the expiration dates? And whether or not they're on extension. But one of the concerns I have is that from a staff perspective, this is different than the policy and budget perspective, we've been very what's the word, we've been very, very persistent to follow up to get information to this body and to make certain that things stay on track. There are times where it takes longer than expected to get responses. And if we're going to enter into this, and certainly it sounds like that's the body's decision, or could be the body's decision after this goes back for review and everything, I would agree with you that to extend this to 2017 is a long period of time. I think that the public that wants to see this happen wants to see it happen sooner than later. I know that from a staff perspective, having us have to, you know, go back through this process again and again, it takes a lot of time. You know, it's a lot of time for Gene, at my request, to have they sent the material in. It's Tuesday. The council meeting's coming up next week. Has staff had an opportunity to review it? We get the material before noon on Friday for today. Council staff doesn't have city staff doesn't have an opportunity to review it. I don't want your administration, me, to look like we're in the way of your policy choice. So as we move forward, it's important for me to know that when we ask for something, that we'll get a response promptly, that we won't get something on a Friday for a Tuesday meeting, but rather we'll get it a week or two ahead of time. We try to get things 2 weeks before a meeting so that it can be reviewed. Our attorney doesn't just work for us. It's not that we have a city attorney. He works for another city also, and I get concerned about things just languishing out there. You know, things then take a life of their own in the press, you know, public relations, expectations, whether you're for or against the project. They want to see something happen. And again, coming back to staff, it's a lot of work for us to continue to bird dog something. So I would respectfully request that you all, if we're not communicating with the right person, if we're not asking the right questions, that you get back to Gene so that we're not asking, you know, following up two or three times to try to get something in time for a meeting. The body needs to be able to make decisions, and you know, tonight's a night. If we'd had the material sooner, they may have been in a better position to make a decision tonight or to have a more substantive conversation tonight on the points in the contract. I'm somebody that I like to get things done. I'm an idea person, but when a decision is made, it's my job. I'm the executive branch of government. It's my job to execute, to get the job done. And I want to know, as a citizen, that I have a partner that understands that and will follow through with that and help us get things done. I don't know that a motion is necessary. I certainly hear a majority of council consensus to bring this back. I will direct staff to go ahead and review the material, which includes legal. We have some legal requirements that may need to be met, and we need to make certain that we're meeting those. I'm going to ask for the permit timeline so that we can have a conversation about the December 31st, 2017. I think that's too far out, and I think I heard that as a general consensus from council. I'd like to see something in 2016 rather than having this languish another year. It will be council's decision, however, on what that date would be, and having those permit deadlines would help us understand what those constraints are. And I think it would be helpful if there were a way to get a letter of commitment from investors. I think it just I don't know that the council is going to necessarily need that, but I think it'll give us some assurance that there are people that have come to the table that have said that they are willing to move forward with investing in the project. So. Those are some thoughts that I have, and you know, I thank you for being here this evening, for putting together these revisions, and giving the council an opportunity, the public an opportunity to review the material. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah, just to echo something the mayor pointed out was the expedience of response, and as we're getting as this project keeps going down the road of time here, we're running out. And so if there are issues that will come up with the attorney or city staff and they need clarification or something, we really got to get back early.
Yeah. I'll take the blame for that, to be very honest. I've done most of the work on the development aspects, the permitting and design, as well as the numbers.
And unfortunately, my bandwidth is only so much, and after the battle with my dad passing away, and then this year becoming kind of a difficult run-up with a mom who has dementia in Spokane, and just family commitments, job, everything, it's been kind of hard for me to take on the extra, and I got two partners for that. I haven't probably leaned on them enough, but I'll put the blame on myself for not responding as quickly as we probably could have or should have in a few of those situations. So I'll certainly try to do better on that one.
Thank you.
I appreciate you clarifying that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's work together to get this done. If we're really going to see it happen, we're going to have to really work like the mayor's saying here.
Okay. So the constraints that we have right now, we have a couple of people that are on vacation with Key coming up. That includes Gene. That also includes Mr. Lowe. And I'm not intentionally delaying. We need to have the talent here. We need to have the people here to review the material. July 21st would be the next time that we would have an attorney present. And so subject to getting material that they request in time, I would say that July 21st would be the date that I would put on the agenda. So do any council members have issue with that? Okay, so we will move forward with the 21st, and we'll make certain that we have an agenda bill that has an analysis of this, and we can have a discussion. So thank you all very much.
I have a question on that. Does that mean, do you think we will still get a proposed revisions before the 21st that we can kind of look at, or that meeting is where you guys will go ahead and figure out your proposed revisions?
Yeah, the council is responsible for coming up with. So it's my responsibility to make certain that these things are properly analyzed and we identify potential pitfalls and everything. It's council's decision on the terms and the negotiation component of it. So while we will have questions and want to present an analysis, we will not have material to send to you until this body has deliberated and given us direction on, you know, maybe they don't like December 31st of 2017, maybe they prefer the 30th, I don't know. So you will see, just like the public will, a copy of our agenda bill and any comments that we have, that it'll be then deliberation of this body that will result in modifications to this. I think that's a clear statement. So you probably want to be here on the 21st so that you can hear the deliberation.
Yep.
And if you have any questions on the legal front, go right to me, Jim.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Okay, next item on the agenda this evening is under new business. This is AB 15109, authorize the mayor to execute a commute trip reduction agreement with Community Transit. And this will be Mr. Feilberg or Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the City of Monroe currently has an interlocal agreement with Community Transit to implement the requirements of the Commute Trip Reduction Act. That agreement expires June 30th, and we've been asked to renew that agreement for a four-year period from June 30th, 2015 to June 30th, 2019. Just really quickly, the Commute Trip Reduction Act, state law administered through the Washington State Department of Transportation, requires major employers, and a major employer, if I get this right, is defined as a business that has more than 100 people reporting to work during the week between the hours of 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. If you have a major employer within your city or county, then you as a city have to implement the Commute Trip Reduction Act. We here at Monroe do have employers that fit that criteria, Canyon Creek, Cabinet, Natural Factors, and the State Correctional Facility. We have a Commute Trip Reduction Ordinance, and we have an opportunity or a choice. We can either implement the Commute Trip Reduction Requirements directly, which means we get the money from the State Department of Transportation, $14,000 over the biennium, and we can work with those individual businesses to develop Commute Trip Reduction Programs, monitor their progress, watch them implement surveys and do reporting to the state, or we can enter into this interlocal agreement, which we have done with Snohomish or Community Transit, and allow Community Transit to do those administrative tasks on our behalf. As you can see from that interlocal agreement, other jurisdictions like Arlington, Bothell, Edmonds, Lynnwood, Marysville, Mukilteo are also party to that interlocal agreement. It's just a matter of efficiency. And again, it's revenue neutral. The share of the city share of the funds that would come from the state to implement this, which is $14,000 plus during the course of each biennium, would go directly to Community Transit to administer the requirements of the act.
on our behalf. And so I'll also add, just by virtue of us as a city having major employers that meet the requirements of the Clean Trip Reduction Act, we as a city, City of Monroe, regardless of how many employees we have, also are subject to the requirements. So there's actually four: City of Monroe, State Corrections, Natural Factors, and Canyon Creek that will be subject to the requirements of the Clean Trip Reduction Act here in Monroe. So the staff recommendation is to allow the mayor to sign the interlocal agreement with Community Transit to conduct the Community Trip Reduction services on our behalf. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I move to authorize the mayor to sign an interlocal agreement with Community Transit for commute trip reduction services and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary at work.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Herring. Discussion on the motion, Councilmember Hanford, and then Councilmember Cutter. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes. Just a quick question. I'm not sure if this is related, but do we have any say by doing this? Does that allow the city to have any say on where the bus stops get put in our city limits?
No. Not with specific reference to this, no.
Okay. If it's okay, out of curiosity, who determines that?
The bus stop locations? Community transit, and certainly a local government can lobby on behalf of bus stop locations or shelters. But it wouldn't be part of this particular act.
So they decide where they're going to go, and we have no say?
When we had the issue with Village Way, you know, we certainly lobbied on the route, but when it came time to identify the location of bus stops, they did need to get permission from Brad as a city engineer for some of the siting and whatnot. But as Mr. Osaki pointed out, this is for the commute trip reduction, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, we are part of a negotiatory process. It's just, if you're talking blocks, that's probably not within the realm of our scope, but it's like sight distance triangles and things like that.
Gotcha. If I could add something later on, then just a question about, I'd love to bring up, if we can add to new business, just a quick thing about placing bus stops in our city, since it's not related to this. Thank you.
So we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Councilmember Kennebec.
Mentioned four employers who were subject to this. So is that updated annually? I mean, how do they know who's subject to it?
As part of this agreement, we as a city, our responsibility is to notify Community Transit if we feel that there's a business that satisfies that requirement. And that would just be from local knowledge and maybe even business license applications.
How is it per location? If a business is in Monroe but has two locations and it equals 100,
it's per location.
Okay, so even though the business itself might have 100 people if they're split.
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right. Just curious. Thanks.
Thank you. So we have a first and we have a second on the floor. Any more discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 5-0. Let the record show that for the vote that Councilmember Camp had just stepped out. The next item on the agenda is under new business number 2. This is AB 15110, ordinance number 010-2015-2015, budget amendment, first reading. Ms. Nelson. Thank you.
Every time I talk to you about the budget, the council chambers are clear.
Spreadsheets, they're wonderful.
I'm going to go through the items in the agenda bill that summarize what's in the budget amendment. I'm not going to go tediously through every line item, but I would like you to just stop me at any time with any questions that you have. And likewise, if I'm talking about any of your budgets and you feel like I'm not representing them correctly, please speak up and feel free to talk over me. This is the first budget amendment of the year, so one of the big things we do is reconciliation of beginning fund balances. So you recall when we did the budget last fall, we estimated what we thought the beginning fund balances would be. Now we know what they are, and so we're amending the budget so they will be actuals. And the good news to the city is that this increases our beginning fund balances by $1.7 million. So, yes, we always estimate conservatively. And so this was, for the full size of the budget, it's a very small percentage, but it's a nice chunk of change. In the general fund, that equates to an addition of $449,000 to the general fund that we didn't have before. I'm going now to the box on the agenda bill here. And these are all general. This is strictly the general fund right now that I'm talking about, not the other funds. So we increased the beginning fund balance $449,000. Then there's the estimated increase in sales tax that I think I discussed back in March. We had a little discussion about new revenues of $157,000. There's a police grant that's small. It's a wash. It's a revenue in, expense out. It's a wash. Then there's a release of public safety restricted fund balance of $90,000. This is to pay the salary for an employee that last year when we were doing the budget, we were anticipating this employee to retire, and it turns out they're not. And so at the time, the chief did say, if this employee chooses not to retire, we can use the public safety restricted fund balance to pay for their salary. So that's what we're doing now, because we now know what's happening. Expenditures, we're increasing the public safety restricted fund balance by $14,000, because at the end of the year, Debbie Willis does a reconciliation of what the actual activity took place, and so what the restricted fund balance should be actually, so it became up to $14,000 more. And because that's red light traffic money that's left over that we haven't spent, she estimates how much she thinks she's going to spend, and then now she knows exactly, and she spent $14,000 less than she thought she was going to. And and it's also, there's one federal, the chicken case, that we still have a little bit, about $8,000 from that. And then there's also the sales tax money. We now restrict that more police, the public safety sales tax increase. We keep that separate from other general things so that, you know, we're not spending it on parks or finance or something like that. Under expenditures, there's an adjustment to the facilities interfund fees, and that was a painful one. There was a huge miscalculation in what the ending fund balance was going to be for the facilities fund, our internal service fund, and it ended up being way less than what we anticipated it to be, so we had to increase the fees citywide for all the funds. The general fund got a hit. Their proportionate share was $104,000. To pay to make up the balance in that interfund, because the internal service funds have to keep a positive fund balance and they have to maintain their reserves per the reserve policy. So this maintains the policy. Let's see, there was the market adjustment to non-rep salaries for $30,000 that was previously approved in a council meeting earlier this year. Executive admin assistant, this position, this isn't carved in stone, this keeps changing. It was a deputy city clerk, it was it's been a bunch of things. It's, I think, going to help Liz, but I think everyone else is trying to steal that employee, so it's fluid right now, but it's $24,000. I'm sounding cavalier, but actually these positions, a lot of thought and a lot of discussion goes into it. All of these items, there's been a lot of work in the background on these, and a lot of what ifs, and how could we, and is it sustainable? Then there's the staff accountant position being added. Professional services, that is a lump sum of three items. Let me find that.
Lobbying firm, Main Street.
Yes. Lobbying Main Street, thank you, in the downtown. Downtown Main Street firm, lobbying firm.
They're right there in Full Code Development.
Yes, thank you. And
I was going to ask a question about
that. Okay. We combined them because I guess we didn't want to give up our negotiating position of how much we actually allocated for the lobbying firm. And so that's why they're all
for the other items.
And so let's see, there's a few other things that roll over. Court startup costs that weren't spent from last year are going to be spent this year. Some emergency management stuff. The transfer to the contingency fund. We did talk about this back in March. And what we're transferring is $176,000 to the contingency fund, and then some of the money is going to be transferred out for ballers, but the net effect is the contingency fund will be $90,000 to the better. And so that's good news because we're paying that back. And then, the salary commission, this is a new thing that has not been discussed here. As the salary commission has recommendations and they're going to come forward, but it's just timing that you haven't been received that yet. It's $25,000 that they want to increase elected salaries. And I don't know how that works. Does the council have a choice on that? Or?
No, they don't. So I was just commenting to Mr. Brazel that just ought to be salary commission change in salaries or something like that. There is no, it's not a recommendation per se. What it is a final decision.
It's okay.
Is that correct?
Subject to referendum of people they choose to pursue on, but that's a technically accurate statement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just
a point of clarification on that, they have not yet filed anything.
Oh, that's right. That was it. They have to file with you, and they haven't filed it. But we know it's coming, so I thought I'm going to get it in here. And because of those added expenditures, to keep with the reserve policy, I've increased the general fund restrictive balance for emergencies. It has to be 17% of operating expenditures, so that's $78,000 that's being added to that $1.8 million that we have in restrictive fund balance for emergencies. So the bottom line is the general fund is getting additional revenues of $702,000, and we're asking to appropriate $686,000. So the general fund is to the better of $15,000 in undesignated fund balance. The contingency fund, I already mentioned, it's getting $176,000 in from the general fund. It's going to spend $86,000 towards Pollard's, and so it'll be $90,000 to the better. Donation fund is just, you know, we get donations and then we spend them, and it's a self-balancing fund. We don't, but we have to appropriate it. It can't be spent unless it's been appropriated in the budget. Let's see, small things. The Park CIP Fund, this was a new thing that Mike had brought to up. They went out for bids for the athletic courts resurfacing budget and resurfacing project, and the bids came in higher than was originally estimated. So he's got a really good fund balance. He's got like 300,000 fund balance in that fund, and it has to be spent on Park CIP projects, can't be spent on other things. So he asked to use 7,000 of the fund balance to add to that line item, and so that's what that request is there. Street fund is just a tweaking of what reality is now that we know what grants we're getting, what grants we're not getting, and how much in the timing of construction projects real tough. And so they guess the summer before what they think they're going to spend the next year, and now Brad has a better idea what's being spent, so that's being tweaked. It's not necessarily winning or losing money, it's just adjusting projects to the finances and doing things in the time allocated. Utilities and facilities, there's the seasonal and overtime labor. This is my mess up. I dropped it from the budget document that you guys adopted. We have many different documents that I'm transferring money from, and when I'm creating the budget, and it got left off. I took one number off of the payroll spreadsheets that I was using, and they were on another column, and I didn't see it. And this is my bad. The utilities can afford it. They've got it in their in their fund balances and their undesignated fund balance because we were planning on using it, but then I realized after the budget was adopted that it wasn't in there, and so we're putting it in now. And then the facility management fund is the increase of the fees, and so bottom line is, you can see under impact budget on the agenda bill, it shows the increase in the beginning fund balances, revenues decreasing. That decrease is for all funds, is just recognizing which grants are actually coming in this year versus another year. And so that decreases the ending fund balance overall. Those are big numbers that you see that are decreases under all funds. Those are the capital CIP street projects that are affecting that. And that's just timing of when we do the projects. And I hope I made sense. I tend to ramble on about this, but any
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you, Dan. Explain everything for me. I move to accept this first reading, ordinance number 010-2015, amending the budget for fiscal year 2015 to account for actual beginning fund balances and new revenues and expenditures, authorizing and setting forth supportive findings for the use of certain reserves from the city's contingency fund and in accordance with the city's adopted reserve policy, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Tuggett. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Just, Diana, really appreciate it. All the explanations and everything that we see here makes it very clear, makes it easy to answer why we're doing what we're doing. So I appreciate all your all the work on that. Just it's just clear. It makes it really easy. Here's what's coming in. Here's what's going out. And I certainly appreciate the effort to show the contingency fund as well, making sure we get money back in there, and it looks good. You know, when people, I mean, we need to be doing it.
Yeah.
It's part of our reserve policy, and if someone wants to look at it, we're doing it. We're putting it back, and so from that aspect, we're covered on a number of fronts. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Kodabak.
Diane, yes, I echo that. I appreciate all the clarity. I remember, I think my first budget amendment, there was like a $250,000 garbage change that I questioned because there wasn't pre-discussion about it. It was a pretty big ticket item, but going through this, it's pretty clear. Just one thing, under the expenditure for the salary commission, and this is minor, so, but when I read it, it says recommendation to increase mayor salary $600 a month and council salary to $800 a month. Kind of how it's phrased, it looks like mayor's making, even though it says $600 a month and then $800 a month, I would do them in the same, like if it's a total, I know it's minor, but somebody looking at that for a, you should put the month.
Oh, $230,600 a month as opposed to by
$600, and then because our total is $800 a month, but the total from there, one or the other, just to make it consistent. And then you answered my question about the $72,000 because that none of that has been approved yet, but you're just budget, you're amending expenditures to plan for that, for the lobbying and all that. We might not.
It's appropriated, but that doesn't mean it has to be spent.
Exactly. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember, one of the things that we're looking at there is, as you know, we've talked about the Main Street program, we've talked about a couple other things, and I, you know, Mr. Asaki is very busy with one staff planner out right now, and we need to go through the thought process of what we do for, you know, Main Street program, you know, the permit center, the code rewrite, and also the lobbyist contract. So by lumping it into professional services, it gives us a little bit of flexibility to come back and talk to council about what we might do and then potentially issue an RFP without showing our cards as to what we've fully budgeted.
Sure.
So I would anticipate that we'd be coming back to council over the next few weeks to have that conversation about any one of those items. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? We do have a motion on the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Let the record show that Councilmember Camp did return to the room during the presentation. So I forgot to mention that when he came in. Okay. next item on the agenda is final action. This is AB 15111, resolution number 012-2015 adopting the 2016-2021 Transportation Improvement Program. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. You had a public hearing on this last week, and you have it in front of you. There's another paper that has the where the money's coming from on the two right-hand columns, as requested last week. And tonight's the night to adopt the six-year transmission program.
Councilmember Cutterback.
I will make a motion to approve resolution number 0112-2015, adopting a six-year transportation improvement program for the year 2016-2021.
I have a first from Councilmember Cutterback. I think a first was that Councilmember Rasmussen. I'm sorry, second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion to approve? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. We'll now move on to Councilmember reports. And during this time, we can come back and revisit your item that you came up, that you mentioned, Councilmember Hanford. So we'll start this way and come to you then. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. I had the opportunity, as I did a couple of years, to attend the annual Master Builders Craft Feed. They invite elected officials to. It was a lot of fun. Good time to hang out in a social environment with some of those of us here, and a great chance to get to know some of those people better. I enjoyed beautiful evenings at every yacht club, and it's just a great time. Again, the weather's been amazing. Been out and about. I saw the mayor walking around downtown on Saturday as I was driving by. He actually saw me. He's like, "Hey!" And just all over, I got to get a chance to get to Lake Rosinger. I know, which is not in the city limits, but it's close by. It's just a great place. And we're having an open house up there in the fire department. It's just another one of those kind of local communities that really get together and do stuff. And it was a lot of fun. And we like going up there during the summertime anyway. But that and the things going on at the park, just really excited about just the land, the concerts, seeing all kinds of stuff from the chamber. A lot of momentum, a lot of things going. And summertime here is just awesome. We the parks and everything that goes on with the concerts and the triathlons and all that stuff that's coming up. So. An exciting time.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely enjoying the weather. Had a chance to run my first half marathon over the weekend. Success, I made it. yeah, it was a good time. And then celebrated my wife and I our 12th anniversary earlier this week, so very pleased with that. And speaking of our parks and events and everything going on, those of you that are running or participating in the triathlon, well, look for me. I'll be one of those out there handing out water as you bike or run by. So,
nice.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Attended the last Miracle League game on Saturday, so thank you, Mayor, for coming out and speaking before the game. Last game, I had a lot of kids. It was a good day. And then I had the pleasure. I couldn't go to the craft feed because I went to Stanwood City Council meeting. So it was just really interesting to attend another city council and to hear, you know, the transportation plan. They approved their final ordinance for their comp plan, so they're done. So it's just interesting. So we got a great city here, great staff, though, so appreciate it.
You set yourself when they said all those in favor, almost saying
aye. Oh, TikTok. It's weird.
I've almost done that in another setting. Yeah. Councilmember Hanford?
Well, around that, congratulations.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at you.
Me?
Yeah.
For what?
For your promotion at work. That's probably why you're up in the family. Great job.
Yeah.
Nothing to report. The question I had was, there's a new bus stop at Kelsey where Blueberry meets Kelsey, which was already a nightmare of an intersection.
Uh-huh.
And now, I was coming up to the stop sign to take the impossible left.
Yeah.
And there was a bus there with a new stop. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? So, how does that happen? What can we do about it?
How does it make the intersection any worse?
There, you can't even see around. There's two cars, two lanes coming. The people turning right, and the people going straight. And it's already hard enough to see around the people taking the right to see if there's anybody coming straight to go. While you're looking really quick to the right, and now with the bus there, you can't tell if anybody's coming, and so it's just much worse.
Are they stopping in the middle of the lane? Because if they stop in the lane, then that creates a break in traffic, right?
They stop in the right turn lane, but the straight line's still there.
Okay, so over by Rite Aid?
No, by the big lot.
Okay.
South of railroad tracks.
Okay.
So they cross the tracks and then they stop.
On southbound.
Yeah, southbound.
Got it. Anybody going to Friendlands is fine. Okay, so he's having anybody turning right or left would have a bus potentially in the sight distance triangle.
Exactly.
And you're saying that it's probably not in the sight distance triangle where it's stopping.
No.
Okay.
So I'd love for that to be looked at. However that does. If it means we have to look at that intersection, it should be on our list of things to be looking at anyway, but just what was already bad got kind of worse.
Okay. So I'll touch, Gene and I will touch base with Brad just so we understand it, and I don't know what options would exist if there's a way to move it to another location, but we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, going out to staff, Mr. Osaki.
A couple quick items. Tractor supply permit was issued today, so the board should start there very soon. And then we have an intake meeting scheduled Monday for another flat, probably about 45 watts. Chain link stays good. That's it.
Okay. Sounds good. And busy. Ms. Nelson?
For those of you who have not had a chance to do so, please send me your information for the TBD annual filing. Your name, your spouse's name, your place of employment, and any business interests in the household of household members.
So, for those of you that haven't responded before you leave tonight, can you just write that down on a piece of paper and give that to Diane, just so it gets done? Did Councilmember Gamble respond?
Yeah.
Okay. So if before you leave tonight, if you could just go ahead and handwrite it and just give it to her, we need to get that stuff turned in.
What do you feel, Elizabeth?
Diane, I responded.
Your name, your wife's name.
Your
place of employment, her place of employment.
Your wife's, your spouse's name, and their place of employment if you're one.
Business.
And then any business interests of any member in your household.
Like, are you in business? And then if you could just call Councilmember Gamble in the event that he hasn't been able to reply via email yet.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, we're working on a little snafu with meter reading, but we have a software company that does the meter reading, a software company that does the billing, and they're both doing this. It's not working, and so we're working through it.
To be clear, when she says little snafu, she's conservative in what she says. It's a bit of a snafu, and we have an automated way that we collect data. That didn't work this time, so we have personnel literally going out to collect the data in a more manual process right now. And it's in part because of that we haven't been able to get you the information yet that was requested last week related to the whole thing about filling the swimming pool in May. And when you look at your email, you'll see an update about that. It's our hope to have the information, including some feedback from our attorney, Mr. Lowell, before next week's meeting. So just so you're aware that we're still tracking that.
Okay. Yeah, I sent you all an email tonight, so if you get a chance, send your email regarding that.
Okay. All right, let's go to our Chief Unser.
We have nothing to see.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. Speaking of TBD, because I think someone mentioned a little bit for that, we have received our data from the company that did the payment rating system, and they said we have really good streaks compared to the rest of the country. But we still have $7 million worth of improvements that need to be done right this moment. And it's only getting worse as we go on. So right now we're working on the prioritization of which streets to do first, so we can have that program presented to you during the budget cycle. And the West Main Street contractor has indicated they want to start work on the 6th of July. And they haven't given us yet their schedule. We have it ready for you, so you can know about it next Tuesday when they're going to actually be in which side and that kind of thing. So that's all I have.
And I did notice that the west side of North Lewis Street was torn up this evening as I drove through. So that project will be coming to an end on or before June 30th. And thank you very much. All right, let's go ahead and pop through my stuff real quick. The met with the chamber president, Mike Buse, on Thursday. We talked a little bit about the to introduce him to our community development director over lunch on Thursday. We talked about some of the planning initiatives to improve permit processing, clarify code language, that's procedures, and then the substance, and then also about business and city promotion. So we've talked a little bit about some of that here this evening. I did some business outreach on Thursday, just meeting with a couple of the businesses just as drop-in. Met with Robert Smiley, who was here this evening, and Robin Cole from the Hands Up Project, where they had expressed an interest, and you'll see a letter in there that we sent back to them. They expressed an interest in having temporary housing in one of our parks, and so that's not perfectly documented in that letter, but they were talking about having, you know, somewhere between 10 and a dozen or so tents, and that wasn't something that we could accommodate without having a conditional use permit or something along those lines. So you heard him talk a little bit about some containers or something, but he's very much interested in trying to help out the homeless here in town, and that's a good thing, because what you didn't hear tonight is that, as I understood it, of the roughly dozen or so that were in Al Borland Park, about seven of them before we began doing anything, and that was a couple weeks before we started doing anything, he was able to assist them to find housing. So I don't know what the final numbers were, and that's just something for you to be aware of, that if you're able to attend his meeting, I'm not certain if I'm going to be able to attend it that Thursday morning. I would encourage you to do so. When he said that it's not open to the public, what he didn't mean to say was that you can't attend. If you would like to attend, if you don't have the information in your email, contact me. I've got the information and I can forward it to you. Okay. did some constituent outreach with a conditional use permit where there were some questions, met with staff, went to the MBA meeting. It was nice talking to a variety of people that were there, other elected officials and so on. Also, on Saturday, went ahead and went to the Miracle League. It was wonderful seeing all the folks that were there, the Rotary, the YMCA, and all the other partners that helped make that happen, the city. That's a wonderful thing that we're able to do in this community, and it's part of that love that we show one another here that I really am thankful for. Then did some downtown outreach for a few hours and had both positive and neutral and other reactions as I was out meeting with people. The reason why I did that was because staff had a lot of work last week. We weren't able to get into the mail those brochures, so I wanted to make certain the brochures were distributed on East and West Main Street. I'm hopeful that we can get that stuff out this week, and I'll follow up with staff on that. We do want to get the brochures we talked about last week out into people's mailboxes and into their hands sooner than later. Then on Sunday, I also went up to Mainview Homes on Saturday to talk to them about what sort of people they're seeing there. Whereas before they were talking about people who were coming here from outside areas, the person that I spoke with there on Saturday said that a lot of the people that have been coming most recently are people looking for move-up housing from within Monroe. They did have a couple people from Bothell and some of those areas that are sort of competing areas now from Monroe for commuters, but there were a number of people that they had expressed were sort of move up from within Monroe, and this time I did give them my card and ask them to contact me so that we can talk with their company a little bit about what sort of things we can do to help them talk to people about what Monroe has to offer and everything, and I did give her the Monroe app. On Monday I spoke with Mayor Eslick, and we're moving forward with the IPZ stuff. There's a meeting for that on a Thursday mid-morning also. I think it's Thursday next week. And so she's going to go ahead and move forward with that. She appreciates our support on that. And we had the Flag Policy Committee meeting last night. We had
Russ from the American Legion and Brian Lipsey there, and Mike did a great job of presenting the material, and the Russ from the American Legion was going to go ahead and take that back to the American Legion to have a conversation about how they feel about the way that it's written. The one thing that I did ask them for was feedback on when the mayor can lower the flag. If I have a former mayor pass away where I came from, for some reason it seems natural that they're, you know, former council members, mayors, things like that, you might lower the flag for, but not all jurisdictions do that, or at least it's not written in the policy. And so I just want to make certain that I have an understanding of what they feel is acceptable, and I would be hoping to bring that policy before you in the next few weeks here. Hopefully there isn't a reason for me to have to lower flag or be asked to, and never want that. Did constituent outreach last night. Somebody was on Facebook commenting on something about downtown litter, and then ended up emailing all of you. Of course, because it was on another timeline, I couldn't comment on it. Somebody finally said, why don't you email the council, the mayor, and I ended up getting that, and you'll see some of that response in your email. One thing to note there is I reached out to Mike Buse and said, hey, would you be interested in doing some sort of cleanup day in the downtown? He expressed an interest in doing that, so we'll go ahead and talk with you. I also reached out to, her name is Carrie, I think, from the LDS, the Mormon Church downtown, about whether or not, because we had met with her before, she said that sometimes they have missionaries that come here that are looking for volunteer opportunities, and whether it's the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, or the missionaries, or whomever, it'd be nice to have an ongoing sort of cleanup of the downtown, maybe once a month or something like that. We also need to do some outreach to the downtown businesses and help them understand that a coffee can with cigarette butts in it on the sidewalk probably isn't something that some people would like to see when they're out doing things. Just normal stuff today with admin and meeting prep. But that's sort of a rundown of some of the things that I've been involved in. We'll go ahead and pop over to Gene really quickly and try to get out of here without a motion at 10. Gene.
Okay. One quick thing I just want to let council know. I was approached by a company about a week and a half ago in regards to Track 999, the old landfill.
Yeah.
And they tracked down old insurance policies. They've had success in many cities around the area doing so, and they want monies to do a cleanup. So I need to dive into that. I won't get to that until after I get back from vacation, but I'll brief council on that.
And a footnote to that, while he's on vacation, please, if you have anything that needs to happen, email me, and I'll make certain that it gets distributed to the appropriate staff member. It's my hope that you're doing that already, but in his absence, I'll make certain that it gets fed to the right director, and then, of course, personal issues and whatnot at home, I don't need to be part of that, but just, you've got policy issues, council issues, send those to me, and I'll distribute it to the appropriate directors for response. Go ahead.
Okay. The draft agenda for June 23rd, 2015. Announcements and presentations. We have Senator Kirk Pearson here, and the Salary Commission in the House as well. We have the consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have discussion of the 2015 comp plan. Under new business, we have discussion of fast wells and greases ordinance. And that gets to
awesome.
That's going to be fun.
We've got visuals too.
Nice.
We see a big swamp, please.
That gets to the restaurants that are coming into town that have concerns about the cost of our oil water storage. And then we have authorized mayor to sign amendment to the concessionaires agreement, and that's what I spoke of this evening in regards to them being interested in kayaks to the lake. And then the final action for the budget.
Any questions about next week's agenda?
Okay. I have panhandling and H3O again together on the 23rd of July.
Yes. All right. Any questions, comments? Councilmember Rutt. Who pushed their button?
There we go. Just clarification.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford first, and then Councilmember Rasmussen. I saw your finger move, and his light was on.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Discussion.
Motion. Okay. I have a question.
Okay. Can your... There's a motion on
yes, discussion. We have to have a motion to step to the deadline.
Okay, we have a motion on the table to adjourn, and we have a second to adjourn. All those in any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you for your service. Those of you that had questions, if you could just come over here and let Gene know.
Sorry, Jeff.